Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Time for the Rick Smith Show.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here tonight on the big program. Pennsylvania State Representative Patrick Harkins is going to be here talking about the House Resolution 134 to stop the war on workers. Also going to talk about the budget, a little bit about prevailing wage. There was a hearing today in the House. Also, we're going to talk about the state liquor stores and the potential for disaster there that I think is there. Also, Mark Carlin from BuzzFlash.com going to be here talking about inequity and poverty here in the country. Mike Fedor, candidate for Cumberland County Commissioner, is going to be here talking about his run for office. Plus, he was out in Shippensburg today at a protest of students saying, hey, man, not on our backs. Come on, Governor Corporate. Don't balance the budget on the backs of the future of this country. And also Dan Karas, a 2010 Green Party candidate from Illinois' 14th Congressional District. Let's talk a little bit about energy policy because, you know, you look at this thing in Libya, another example of why we need to get off the juice, another example of why we need to get away from the oil. Had we started 30 years ago like we were moving toward, had we incrementally moved away from the juice the way President Carter wanted, you know, we might not be in all of this mess. We might not be protecting our interests around the world. And I saw the AP reported a story today, and I'll read it because it just caught my attention. Lower Swatara Township, Pennsylvania, High Spire police said a part-time officer took his own life following a car crash Sunday night. The officer was a part-time High Spire police officer. He was off duty when the witnesses said he crashed his Jeep on South Eisenhower Boulevard, rolling it onto its roof. He survived the crash, then shot himself. He was a member of the National Guard who recently returned from Afghanistan. I look at this story. Now, I know very few people who, when they crash their car, the first thought that comes into their mind is shoot themselves. I don't know what was going through this poor guy's mind. I don't know why. But I'm willing to bet that it had something to do with Afghanistan. I'm willing to bet that it had something to do with our involvement in a war, in a quagmire that we cannot win. So I look at what we're doing in Libya, and yesterday I came out and I said, look, I'm not in favor of this. I'm not on any level. But if it's something that's going to be done, I thought Obama kind of did the right thing and let NATO take over. We're finding out more reports. Maybe it's a lot more than that. Now, this is my guy. I like Obama. I like some of the things he's done. A lot of problems. But at the end of this, I don't care who's sitting in the Oval Office. I don't want them to have unilateral power to begin war at the drop of a hat. I do believe in the Constitution, and I do believe the Constitution says you go to Congress. Now, there are some who are going to say, well, you know, Clinton, and as I said yesterday, Clinton got us involved in Bosnia, the lowest loss of life and all of that. Didn't agree with it then, thought he should have had to go get congressional approval to cover the costs. And I think Kucinich is doing the right thing by saying, you know what, we're going to cut funding off to this. We are not in favor of it. What's interesting, what's going to be interesting moving forward is where the Republicans are going to come down on this. Because after all, they are the party of war. They are the warmongers. And it's interesting watching the ideological right wrestle with this concept. They don't like Obama at all. They want to see him fall flat on his face. In fact, you look at some of these crazy religious groups, like the American Family Association, who've come out and said that by us helping whoever it is that we're helping in this mess, because I still don't know. I was told, and this is kind of what we've all been told in a limited fashion, that we're stopping Gaddafi from genocide and killing, mass killings. That's the idea, I guess. For me, at the end of this, I'm not in favor of genocide or civil war, but, you know, if we're not going to go into every country, then we shouldn't go into any country. But this American Family Association came out and said that by having this no-fly zone, we are basically backing Al-Qaeda. So thanks to us, Al-Qaeda is going to take over the world, and that's going to be the end of it. Now, I don't know what's going on over there. Very few of us do. I go back to my main point. If we're not going to go into every country, if we're not going to take that war posture where we're going to move all of our production into creating tanks and planes and arming every 18-year-old to go off to war because heaven knows they can't find a job. So maybe a war economy would be a good thing. Maybe it would. You know, maybe we can get out of this economy. Who knows? It'll be interesting to see where the Republicans stand, because this is an opportunity for them to stand up and say, you know what? We really hate this guy, and we're going to do everything to stick him in the back. So here would be a good time to tie our government back up. I'm kind of interested to see where this goes. If they do, Jake, if they do follow Kucinich's idea in saying that maybe we impeach him.
Well, ironically, two Republicans, and they seem to be coming from two different directions. Rick Santorum said he wasn't aggressive enough. He wasn't on top of it. Senator Toomey said, well, you know, there's no clear objective. So now which is it? Wasn't he clear enough? Is there no clear objective? Wasn't he on top of it? It's clear that they just want to criticize. I mean, this is a tough call. This is a tough call. As far as Al-Qaeda, is that going to be in the mix? Yes. Is it handing over the country to Al-Qaeda? No, absolutely not. And here's another thing. Who is to say that Gaddafi's going to be eliminated?
Well, now what's going on in the British British foreign minister saying, look, yeah, we do want to go after Gaddafi. We do want to take him out. And I said this yesterday. I the U.S. came out and said, well, we're not going after him. Nonsense. You're going after him. And at the end of this, my problem comes very simply back to our dependence on foreign oil. If we didn't have this dependency, look, I'm not in favor of dictators slaughtering their citizens, but you know what? That's going on across the world. If we're not willing to go into places like Darfur, where there, I guess, 70,000 people today have been displaced just today, if we're not willing to go there, why Libya? If we're not willing to go into other regions that are having this kind of turmoil, why there? Partially, I guess, it's, you know, this hatred that we have of Gaddafi. I can't stand him. But at the end of this, man, we're broke. Isn't that what the Republicans keep telling us? We're broke. Where's this money coming from? Oddly enough, 50% of those polled by CBS approve of how Obama's handled Libya. So what's interesting is split right down the middle. Another one of these pick 'em. And no clear message from the American people. So Obama did what he thought was right. I'm going to support him in, now we're in this. We have to move forward, and we have to have clear objectives, and we have to, in a very defined way, do what we need to do and get the hell out of there.
Well, the question mark is, Rick, why isn't there more involvement by the Arab League? I mean, we arm many of these countries with state-of-the-art aircraft. Why can't they take a bigger role?
I guess the big question I have for that is, why did we do that? You know, a lot of these problems, a lot of the problems with people like Gaddafi is that we stockpiled them with all this stuff. You know, there's this fear out there that somehow Gaddafi's going to hand off all kind of nasty chemical weapons and all kind of weapons to who knows who. Where'd they get it? They got it from countries like the U.S., like France, who are saying, you know what, we just want to sell weapons. It's the only thing we make anymore. And, you know, I go back to the Eisenhower quote, you know, for every warship, for every bomb is the failure to build a new school to feed hungry children. And you look at the cuts that the Republicans are talking about, massive, deep, painful cuts to children, to women and infants, to seniors, to job training programs, to all kind of stuff. And yet we have the money somehow to maintain this military-industrial complex that seems to grow ever more hungry. And we seem to bomb more places. If you didn't think they liked us before, how do you think they feel now? So I'm kind of interested. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Where does this go for us? Is this the right move? Are you in favor of jumping in the middle of this, what's going to be a civil war? Personally, I say stay the hell out of it. We should have stayed out of it. We should have, you know, if you wanted to help, send money. Send weapons. Send that way. Don't get us involved in another quagmire. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Pennsylvania State Representative Patrick Harkin. Back after this.
I'll never bend. I'm with you now until the end.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. While much of the nation's attention has been focused on the ongoing protests and recall campaigns going on in the state of Wisconsin, the Badger State is only the tip of the iceberg when it comes to legislation targeting collective bargaining rights. Casting an eye out of the Midwest, you'll find reports of similar but smaller movements afoot. For example, in South Carolina, hundreds of protesters showed up on March 14th to express their concerns about budget proposals being made by Governor Nikki Haley. The call in South Carolina is for a moral budget that cuts special interest tax breaks ahead of plans to slash funding for important public services. Opponents say that $3.7 billion is lost in the current budget due to sales and service tax exemptions. In Maine yesterday, it was a lobby day for workers concerned about right-to-work legislation that is currently proposed in the legislature. The legislation being proposed in Maine has similar language as bills in other states that were written partially with the influence of a Virginia organization called the National Right to Work Committee. Employees in Maine are fighting the legislation because they've seen the numbers that have come out of other states that already have similar legislation. On average, right to work states spend less on school children, the average wages are more than $5,000 lower than non-right to work states, and those states average more than 19% of citizens living below the poverty rate. The national average in 2009 was 14.3%. Maine's rate was 16.9%. Meanwhile, in Indiana, 39 House Democrats continue to hide out in neighboring Illinois in opposition to the majority of the House Republican agenda. The legislators have been out of state for more than a month, and it's unknown when they'll return. The Democrats have said they won't return until Republicans can show they are willing to negotiate. But House Speaker Brian Bosma has repeated, often, that he won't make any compromises. While the Democrats waited out in an Illinois hotel, taxpayers continue to protest at the State House in Indianapolis,
Today is day 30 of protests in that state. In nearby Missouri, the state Senate faced more than 500 workers on March 15th and watched as Republicans were unable to rally enough votes to bring right-to-work legislation in that state. The opposition saw members of the Republican side of the aisle defecting to their camp. These are only a handful of the states currently facing various forms of collective bargaining legislation. Many of these rallies and protests are expected to come to a head on April 4th, when employees and supporters around the country will gather in state capitals and major cities to give a voice to workers on the day Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated while protesting for the rights of sanitation workers in Memphis.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Come all ya good workers, good news to you out there. Now the good old union has come in here to drill. Which side are you on? Which side are you on?
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Ohio Governor John Kasich has a job creation plan. And I guess at least one Republican has a plan. Tell me what you think. He's going to privatize all the state assets. He's going to get rid of the turnpike, the state-owned liquor stores, going to put those into the hands of private corporations. Sound familiar? Evidently, this corporation that he's going to set up, Jobs Ohio, evidently he's going to be the chairman. So not only is he the governor, he's also the chairman of a major competitor. Nice, huh? I guess it's one of those, he's just not the president, he's also a client. Now, this scheme that he's trying to roll out, it's not worked anywhere else. Nowhere else has it been tried, has it worked. In fact, the very conservative Mackinac Center for Public Policy, you know, the place that, you know, that birthed our Tinky Tanks, head Matt Brulé, the Mackinac Center said, in 2009, the deals that were made from 95 to 2004 by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation, they were expected to create somewhere around 62,000 jobs, created just about 17,000. So a failure. And I guess the question is what does our chairman governor think is going to happen? How will this sequel be any better than the original? Hold on. It's coming. It's just around the corner. Wait for it. It's going to work because he says Ohioans are increasing their alcohol consumption. Could it be they don't have a job? Hopefully, someone steals the radical right playbook before it gets here to Pennsylvania and Governor Corporate starts the fire sale on our turnpike and our liquor stores. One thing for certain, he's done well attacking workers' rights. Much like Walker in Wisconsin, workers have been under attack, and fortunately for us right here in Pennsylvania, we've avoided some of it. We've avoided the all-out assault, but don't get comfy, because it could rear its ugly head right here any minute. That's why I think House Resolution 134 calling for an end to the war on workers is so important, and that's why I've asked Pennsylvania State Representative Patrick Harkins to come and talk to us about this piece of legislation and some other stuff. Representative, welcome to the program.
Yeah, it's great to be with you, Rick.
House District 1, so I guess you're number one, huh?
I'm all the way up in Erie. We're calling for a snowstorm tonight.
Uh-oh.
Still a little chilly up here.
And a brother Teamster. I gotta be honest, nice to see a friendly face in Harrisburg.
Yeah, I had 25 years with UPS, and I was a proud Teamster those 25 years that I was with them.
So let's talk about House Resolution 134. First lines of recognizing the rights of workers to form a union and collectively bargain with employers and calling for an end to the war on workers. Kind of a change from what we've seen in Ohio and Wisconsin and Indiana and other states.
I try to be the diplomat. I try to work with all these involved. And I see I haven't had any success on any Republican co-sponsorship. I have 28 Democrats. I'll keep pressing for it. There's some reasonable people on the other side of the aisle, many sensible Republicans on the other side that I've been meeting with over some of these education cuts. Keeping a keen eye, though, to the other states to see what's going on. We don't want to go through a Wisconsin. I was glad to see that we didn't, we didn't cross that bridge. But frustrating nonetheless, though. As a working person in the legislature, I bring a unique perspective to that body. And oftentimes, when I explain working conditions or worker classification, A lot of the times the other reps will look at me as though I'm out from another world. When you explain the things that you go through as a working person, it sheds some light on things that oftentimes people don't see, I don't think, unless they have that background.
Well, let me ask you, is it something that maybe they haven't been where you've been? They haven't, you know, gotten their dirt hands dirty and, you know, just asking the question.
Yeah, not to knock anybody, but I serve with a lot of lawyers and CPAs and great people. But a lot of them aren't out. They weren't out in the trenches. I always laugh about people on my routes. I have the good fortune of representing the district where I delivered for many of the years when I was with UPS. And many of the people still have my mailers from when I first ran on the refrigerators and in their contacts. They keep in contact with me. I see them at the local hardware stores and shopping malls and things like that. So I'm a pretty much grassroots person, and I want to look out for the working person. There's enough people in Harrisburg and Washington that are looking out for the corporate interests. I want to look out for the working person.
That's what I want to hear. You know, because what I've been saying for the longest time is, look, collective bargaining is a win-win for everybody.
Exactly.
Because, you know, as a driver, if you went to your vehicle and you saw something wrong, you had the empowerment, you had the voice to go, you know what, I'd like this fixed.
There were many things that stood out, and I even mentioned this one when I was running, but I would deliver prescription drugs to people because you got a cheaper rate if you bought through a mail order. And one Friday afternoon, about 4:30 in the afternoon, I went to I have a very poor district. It's the highest poverty rate in Pennsylvania, and I'm not very proud of that. I'm working hard to correct it. But a woman came out in her 80s, and she didn't know the interaction of the medicine that she was going to take for her heart. And I told her to call the local pharmacy at the corner, and I had the number for the pharmacist who was a friend of mine. And I told her to ask for him and see what he said. But it always struck a nerve with me that I was dispensing prescription drug interaction advice to a person who should be dealing with a doctor or dealing with a pharmacy directly. But she had to cut costs, and she had kerosene jars all over her jugs on her front porch. I mean, couldn't afford to have her gas or oil or whatever she used, so supplemented that with a kerosene heater. And you just saw things that pulled on your heart, and that's what got me into the business.
Yeah, and you know, and the thing is, you look at the current budget, the discussion that's going on around this, and some of the major cuts that are going on. I don't want senior citizens to have kerosene in jars. I don't want my grandmother to have to worry about whether she can keep the heat on or buy medicine. I don't want college kids worrying that they're not going to be able to afford a college education. Those are things I don't want.
Education is prime to me. I have three young children, married with three young children. I see the benefits of the computers on the classroom desks. I see the smart boards. I was in a classroom setting this morning reading to a bunch of pre-K students. A lot of my colleagues don't get into the schools. As well-intentioned as they are, they don't see the benefit. They don't see the investment. We talk about economic development, and to me that's the key, is to put these cornerstones in place with education. We should be attracting anybody we can from around the country to come to our university.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is, you know, if you want to attract businesses, maybe you should have workers who are capable of, oh, I don't know, thinking.
That would be a good start.
You know, I've got three kids myself, 2, 4, and 8, and these next years are going to be the most important years of their life. Fortunately for my kids, I had the resource, you know, being a Teamster like you, getting, you know, earning a reasonable living wage, to send my kids to, you know, to pre-K programs and to early education programs that most people don't have the opportunity for. And I wish that was something that we would take seriously in this state. I know we did under Governor Rendell, and he expanded the program, but I think we need to go further than that.
I've been saying from cradle to grave, we can never discount any aspect of education. Even older people that are left go from their jobs need to be retrained. We've got to look at every aspect and every angle and find out how to arrive at the best solution, but I don't think we're going down that path right now.
No, I absolutely agree. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Patrick Harkins, Pennsylvania State Representative, number one district.
Looking out for number one.
There you go, brother. you know, I look at what Kasich's doing in Ohio, this fire sale that they're talking about doing in Ohio. They're going to sell off their turnpike, privatize their liquor store, because, you know, in Ohio, Evidently, according to their governor, they're consuming more alcohol. My take on it is you've got a lot of people with a lot of time on their hands, and why not drown your sorrows? I don't see that path as good for us here in this state.
In a down economy, it's proven that people always turn to the spirits a little bit more. But I was disappointed in the governor's actions with the high-speed rail. He cut off the funding or refused the funding for that. That's a key component for us up here. I have GE. They manufacture the locomotives in my district. But all that aside, if we're going to have the connector between Ohio and New York, he's going to leave us out as the important link. And, you know, that's another shot to us that really I don't think those people see. That's a very short-sighted approach on his part, I think.
Well, I've been saying what we've got, unfortunately, is we've got politicians who are very good at getting into office. They're good at sloganeering and campaigning. But when it comes to governing, we have a bunch of visionless leaders who can't look into the future and see the needs of the public. And I'm saying in this area here in Harrisburg especially, we better figure out how to get some public transportation and quick, because it's gridlocking now.
And so many people are so good at campaigning, but when it comes to legislating, they lack. And I was surprised when I arrived in Harrisburg to see that. Like I said, a lot of good intentions. But like Red Fox used to say, if you're not cutting the mustard, you better be licking the jar.
Yeah. I haven't heard that in a long time, and it wasn't on transportation. All right. But, you know, I look at this, the fact that we're talking about selling off state assets. And now the governor's kind of pulled back a little bit because of the $2 billion number that was pulled out of, you know, who knows where. I think they reached around behind and popped out a number, $2 billion being it. But we're finding out that that's not quite going to be $2 billion. We're finding out that there's a whole lot of problems with privatizing the wine and spirit shops. I'm curious where your take on this is.
I've never been a fan of privatizing. Like I said, for 25 years, I lived the corporate life. I was a worker. I was the ant in the mole hole, and I saw what the corporations do. I don't want to knock any specific corporation or the one that I work for because I earned a good living and I provided a decent wage and everything else. But I also gave them 25 years of my life, and I saw the things that go on. I saw the day after Christmas where the mailman was out doing the same job I was, and he had to cover every territory and get rid of all his mail. But I was told, hey, if nobody's around, just ditch the package and take it for a ride for a couple of days. The public doesn't see that, and everybody hears, oh, we can save a couple bucks. I don't agree with that. I didn't agree with selling the turnpike. I just think that once you go down that road and you start selling off your assets, you're always going to have peaks and valleys. And when you hit the next valley, what are you going to sell off?
Yeah, I mean, it's like selling off your TV and your computer to get the next fix.
Right.
What do you got left?
Exactly.
Let's talk about something else that's been going on, and it's really going across the state. All of this anti-worker, really, call it what it is, it's anti-unionism.
Mm-hmm.
I guess today in the House there was a prevailing wage hearing.
I didn't attend that. I've been in my district. We had hearings in Erie on the liquor stores, the vouchers, and on health care. It's all basic. But that is something that I closely follow. I always kind of giggle when I hear some of my colleagues on the other side talk about they don't even believe in a minimum wage, let alone the prevailing wage. I don't think a lot of them understand the concept. But it's frustrating to hear them say that it should be between the employer and the employee. And I often think I was a Teamster member. Without that union representation, I was out running some nights till 9 and 10 at night at the Christmas time. But when you would factor in if I didn't have a union representing me, I'd probably be out till whenever they wanted at whatever cost they wanted to pay me.
But that's what they want.
Exactly.
That's their worldview. And when you know our governor here and when the guy in Ohio and Wisconsin said we want to be open for business, we want to be business friendly, that's exactly what they want.
And then that kind of makes me scratch them too, though. You see them neglect the infrastructure, the bridges and the roadways and everything else. But you think, what would happen to a UPS or a corporation that uses highways for transportation? Everybody needs their goods to move, high-speed rail and everything else. What are they doing on that front? What are they neglecting? How are they not serving the corporate interest by pulling back on some of these things? It just seems like the greed factor takes over, and they don't use their head. They don't think 20 years out what we're doing to the next generation.
You know, I want to go back to this prevailing wage thing, because on the right, they seem to be all all bunched in the panties about this, claiming, oh, it's the union wage.
Right.
When in reality, it's the prevailing wage of the area, of the employers who are, I guess, proud enough to report what wage they pay their workers.
And that's what it comes down to.
You know, the crummy employers, they don't report it.
No. And we have a hard time with illegals even up here sometimes. When you get a construction project going on, a big supermarket or something like that that's a national chain, I'll get calls from somebody and they'll want to turn them in. But we do have Border Patrol up here with our close proximity to Canada. But it's not as bad as other areas, but it is a frustrating point, too.
Last thing I've got for you, looking at this voucher thing. I got to be honest. I think as a kid growing up in Cleveland, we did probably something dumber than vouchers. We decided that it was, well, not me, but you know, the people there who were destroying the education of the city of Cleveland, and in a lot of places back in the 70s, a lot of states, they decided they were going to put kids on buses in poor areas on the west side of Cleveland and ship them to poor areas on the east side of Cleveland and vice versa. So we were shipping poor kids all around the city. I guess for this thought that maybe we're going to somehow balance things out, balance resources out, didn't happen. Basically broke the education system in the city. I see the exact same thing coming up with this voucher thing.
We had the hearings in Erie last week. It was supposed to last 2 hours, and it ended up 4.5. I ran the meeting with the policy chairman, Representative Sterla. But we gave all parties involved the opportunity to share their opinions and their beliefs. And we're not a failing district. We're in debt out our ears, and we've got a lot of things to dig out from that. But I don't think that that this is any kind of a solution. My kids attend Catholic schools. I wouldn't qualify for it for the income level. I never believed in the voucher system. I think that if you take the money, you take the problems with it. And I also believe that if a child were to go to a private school and that child is a disruptive child or he has a learning disability, that school is then obliged to find the correctiveness for that child at whatever expense. So it's going to cost the school that's assuming the person that much more money. And I could go on for hours with that one. But was that Cleveland deal started under Dennis Kucinich?
No, it was started before Kucinich. Okay. And it wasn't Kucinich. It was Judge Batista,
okay.
Who was the guy who issued the federal ruling, I guess. It's a long, screwed-up scenario. But it was destructive nonetheless. You know, but let me ask you this, because as I read the bill in the third year, the vouchers then go to everyone in failing schools. Isn't that correct?
I believe so, and there's a lot of amendments to it. But here's the other thing. If you have a child in school and it's $6,000 per student, and they give you a voucher for, say, $2,000, if it's a person of an income under $27,000, how does that person make up the $4,000 difference?
Well, they don't.
Exactly.
Because, you know, because part of me, and I've interviewed a couple of people on this, that after the third year, it's opened up to everybody and everyone has the opportunity. So I was going to say there might be a chance for you to pick up some spare change.
I'm looking actually back at going back to UPS loading the truck at night. But
do they pay you that badly?
Well, I turned in my own car, my state car, and I purchased my own. I only take mileage.
You're going to do really well.
Yeah.
There was a brainchild the governor came out with.
Yeah.
You're going to do real well.
What people don't understand is I drive the furthest. Me and Representative Fabrizio and Horniman and Sonny and Evans are the furthest away. 5.5, 6 hours on a good weather night. 2 weeks ago, it took me 7.5 hours. But I love the job. I enjoy what I'm doing, and I feel like I'm making a positive contribution to the legislature. And I'll stick around as long as people want me.
Yeah, I tell you, you sound like a great guy. We'd love to have you back often.
Thank you, Rick. Anytime.
All right. Representative Patrick Harkins, thanks for your time, brother.
Thank you. Great talking with you.
We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Yes, it is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
At last, some uplifting economic news, a sign that the economy is really starting to hum again. Forbes magazine reports that there are 199 more billionaires this year than last. Moreover, the combined wealth of the world's 1,210 billionaires now totals $4.5 trillion, up by nearly $1 trillion from a year ago. So see, the economy is not stuck in the doldrums, as so many party poopers keep saying. Also, with an average of $3.7 billion in their bank accounts, you can just bet that these uber-rich folks will be spending like crazy. And you know what that means, don't you? It means that their vast piles of wealth will soon begin to tinkle down on you and me. Just you wait and see. And wait, and wait, and keep waiting. Workers in our country have been dramatically increasing their productivity since the highly ballyhooed economic recovery began about 20 months ago, generating billions of dollars in new wealth. Yet, wages have stayed stagnant. Practically none of the increased wealth from worker productivity gains has gone to the workers. Instead, 94% of the money has been siphoned off by the corporate powers for such things as fattening profits at a record pace and jacking up CEO pay to exorbitant levels. Also, nearly $2 trillion of the gains have simply been stashed in the corporate vaults rather than using it for wage hikes or new job creation. And even the little bit of job creation that is taking place is bottom-heavy. 40% of the jobs lost in the recent economic crash were high-paying positions, but 49% of the new jobs are low-paying. This is Jim Hightower saying, so we see corporations and billionaires wallowing in fabulous new wealth while productive workers fall out of the middle class. That's not a recovery by any means. It's a robbery.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.com.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Where to find all the bitter now, better dollar, 30, will they give me 30, make it 30, bitter, mama, 30 dollar, will they give me 30, little, 30 dollar bid. 30 dollar bitter now, 35, will they give me 35, I'll make it 35, the bitter, 35, ooh, what a bitter, that a $35 bid.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Tomorrow, 10:30 a.m., Capitol Rotunda here in Harrisburg, there is a citizens' hearing and rally for the Affordable Care Act. I hope a whole bunch of folks show up to that and voice their support. It should be a very, very interesting day out. Also, faculty and students at Shippensburg University today were out rallying in protest of Governor Tom Corbett's state budget proposal. They see this as, look, man, balancing the budget on those who can least afford it. And you're seeing that really across the entire country. A bunch of states are going, you know what, we can balance our budget by sticking to somebody else. Not our buddies, not our corporate friends, not the wealthy. No, 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 no. Those poor people, those working stiffs, those people who get their hands dirty and have to wash their clothes after work. They have to have a washer and a dryer. They don't dry clean their stuff. Interestingly enough, though, in New Jersey, a judge ruled today that the state's school budget cuts failed to meet the constitutional standard for education. This kind of a major blow to Chris Christie, who has taken nearly $1 billion from education. I wonder how that could work here. Superior Court Judge Peter Doyne said the state's schools would have needed even more money than what was cut, an additional $1.6 billion to meet the mandates for education as set out in the state's constitution, according to Reuters. So what he's basically saying is, not only can you not cut the almost $1 billion you're thinking about, you've got to add more money to it. He said this in a 96-page report to the state's Supreme Court. Now, I'm sure it'll move on, but the judge said, you know, it's clear the state has failed to carry its burden, and it will be interesting to see where this moves from here, because Christie was the guy. He was the guy everybody was looking to with, yeah, take him on, go get him. Go get those teachers' unions. Go get that education money back. And right here, you know, you hear kind of not as loud, but you're hearing some of the conservatives going, yeah, go after them. Yeah, yeah. take that money back. Let's dumb down our education system, which is why I find it interesting that back in January, the Pennsylvania Institute of Certified Public Accountants released a report examining the state's budget and made a bunch of recommendations on how they could save $1 billion or more. It's interesting some of the stuff they went into. Now, I don't agree with their whole public-private partnership stuff. I'm not a big P3 fan. I don't want public money going to private corporations so that they can enrich themselves. But on the education front, I thought they made some very sound and rational thoughts, like cutting the number of administrators in half. If the school district administrative duties were combined, they say, with one administrative office and one business office running just two school districts, you could save anywhere, according to them, from $330 million to $800 million a year. That could be almost, and I've said this before, I think we should be combining school districts. But that could save almost as much as they want to cut. They also call for capping administrative and business office costs at 4.3% of the total budget. This is something that the most efficient school district in Pennsylvania is doing. And I don't know about getting to that, but somewhere in that range, they're saying if they can get to that 4.3% of expenditures, could save somewhere around $600 million a year. So right now you're looking at $1.4 million. You don't need to cut anything from education because you've done a couple of smart things. They also say reduce the number of school administrative and business offices to 100 and you could save $1 billion a year. Also have one central school administrative and business office for each of Pennsylvania's 66 counties and you could save $1.5 billion a year. I'm in favor of looking at some of those ideas because we shouldn't have to be cutting teachers. We shouldn't have to be cutting their pay and freezing their pay and saying, oh, well, you're going to have to pay more for your health care because you're going to push people out of the profession. These are very educated people with options. And the last thing I think we want to do is be pushing good qualified teachers out of the profession.
Well, there's one variance that you didn't mention, and I think in Maryland has it, and that's each county has their own school district. Now, it's basically the same idea.
I think that's exactly what the last one was. Have one administrative office for 66 counties.
You feds for the state.
Each of the 66 counties in the state.
No, okay. I thought you meant it. Okay. I misinterpreted what you said. Jury's out on that. Some educators aren't thrilled about that.
Not fond of that. I do think you can cut some of it down. Do we need 500 school districts in this state? I don't think so. I think you could pare that number down to a more manageable and get rid of some of the higher costs. I mean, if we're going to talk about cutting education, cut it where it should be cut. Not in the classroom, not in the services provided to kids. I don't want to see kids being put out of athletics, out of extracurriculars, because they can't afford to pay the upfront costs. I mean, to be honest, the reason I participated in football, basketball, hockey, baseball, because it was there. It was encouraged. It was part of being part of the school spirit, all of that. If I had to pay for those, there's no way I could pay for that.
Well, there's another thing that we don't want to talk about, and that is in some of the schools, especially in the big cities, Rick, let's be honest, the only way some of those kids are going to get out is through excellence in sports and get a scholarship to a university. That's the only way they can get out. I mean, they come from poor backgrounds, and, they're forced to use their athletic ability. If we cut back on that, I think you're sentencing those kids to a life of poverty pretty much.
So in Wisconsin, they're running this bizarre ad because they're going after, the right wants to recall one of the Democrats. So they're making this ad against one of the Democrats, which I gotta play for you because I think it's hysterically ignorant. Listen to this.
Comes in early, stays late. She's the best teacher in her school. And if Dave Hansen has his way, she has every reason to leave Wisconsin. Our government employee contract laws tie her salary to what we pay the worst teachers. It's not fair to teachers, and it's not fair to our kids. We can solve the problem, but Dave Hansen's playing partisan politics instead. Call Senator Hansen. Tell him to stop playing partisan political games.
What we pay the worst teachers, she's energetic, she gets there early, she does all this. You know what? She has every reason to leave. She has every reason to leave. Are you kidding me? She has every reason to leave because this guy that they're targeting wants to keep her working conditions and wages the same as they are right now, that she's working under currently, that she's happy with. That's what their argument is. She's going to have every reason to leave because this guy is going to stand up for her to have a voice on the job, have a voice in her conditions, have a voice in her wages. She's going to have every reason to leave. If that were the case, wouldn't she have already left? Just a thought. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We are back after this.
Blue in an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make happen.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
One 888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Do you remember back before the November elections when the Republicans said that priority one, job one, is going to be jobs? Remember that? They were going to create jobs. They had this great plan. They came out with the pledge. They had the grand pledge. They had the pledge right there for you. And it said jobs. We're going to create jobs. Have they done that? Am I seeing anything coming out of Congress that would give me the impression that jobs are on their mind? To be honest, the only thing that I'm seeing, more divisiveness, more division, more divisive politics, more of the same, more of what they've been known for, such as
curtailing abortion rights. H.R. 3, the No Taxpayer Funding for Abortion Act. You know, they've kind of lost that cutesy little thing they used to have, where they would have little acronyms and cute little names. But I guess the No Taxpayer Funding for Abortion Act is kind of what the Lulu right wants. But basically what they want to do is they want to strip women of their rights. And they want to take them back to the good old days. You know, where the originalists want to take us, where the Tenthers want us to be, where women didn't have the right to vote, and they had to answer to their man. Yes, the way it should be. Back when you were a kid, Jake.
Not long ago.
Well, I mean, you were around before the passage of Griswold. That was early 1960, I think 64. Mm-hmm. So you were around then.
Yes, there was a different world then. You're absolutely correct.
They want to go back to that, where women were at the whim of a man. And I got to be honest, as the father of two daughters, that kind of short-sighted, ill thought-out thinking scares me. Because I don't want my daughters to be forced to be dependent on anyone. I want them to choose to be a mutual partner. I want them to have options in their lives. But our friends on the right, not so thrilled about that. Especially when you look at the fact that a guy like Mike Pence, Republican from Indiana, wants to cut off $317 million in Title X funding for Planned Parenthood. Under Title X, money cannot be used for abortion. We already know that. But again, you know, that's not going to mean anything to them. They're going to go and do what they need to do. And you have to understand, Planned Parenthood does so much more. And I'm a firm supporter of Planned Parenthood, and I hope they get their heads out of their behinds and start fighting back against this idiot with the video. And every woman in this country should be fighting for them, because they do an awful lot of work for low-income women. You know, cancer screenings, breast exams, pregnancy tests, prenatal stuff, you know, all of the OBGYN stuff that low-income communities can't afford, these folks do. That's why I'm in favor of what they do, and that's why I think it's important, and it's important that we fund it. They also want to defund NPR. Why? Because that little twit with the video camera, who won't be recorded himself, he wants no part of anyone recording what he has to say, but he'll put a camera in his pocket and record somebody else. So because of that, you got NPR, who I got to give a little bit of credit to. They are fighting back, and they are saying, you know what? We turned down the money numerous times. That little weasel just edited it out. And if you watch the video, it looks really bad. You got to give the kid credit. He's good with the knife. Also want to investigate American Muslims. You got Peter King, who spent an awful lot of time. About 2 weeks of hearings going after American Muslims. You know, because, you know jobs, we're plentiful with jobs. We got more jobs than we need. You know, because they created all those jobs before, remember? They also wanted the fight to declare English as the official American language. Again, because this is somehow going to create jobs. You know, the English Language Unity Act. Yes, we need to have more of these things. And then my favorite came yesterday, I talked about it, reaffirming the In God We Trust motto. Got to have that, because, you know, just in case you forgot, just in case it wasn't plastered all over everything, it wasn't on your money, and when I don't know how many people read their money, but it's got to be there, because it makes me feel better that, you know, in case I've forgotten, it's right there, which is kind of their thought on the whole Ten Commandments thing, which I just love. The idea that we need to have the Ten Commandments plastered everywhere because we're, to be honest, just kind of too stupid to actually remember them. There are 10 of them after all, and that's a lot. That's a lot to ask because, you know, that's a lot. And we can't remember to be decent human beings. No. We can't remember to not kill or steal or cheat on our wives because, after all, we love our country and working hard. After all, that's what Newt Gingrich said, and that's okay. I wonder if God okays that one. I know my wife didn't buy it, but I wonder if God would buy that.
God. The same people who say that you should religion should be taught at home. And if it's taught at home, you mean you forget? You forget about the Ten Commandments? You forget what Christ taught? I mean, it's so superficial. I mean, it's obviously predicated on politics. And by the way, Pence seems to be really, really, he's almost over the cliff over there in the right wing. I mean, so far up the right wing. I mean, you can tell, if not this time, he's definitely running for something bigger than his present position. You can bet on that.
Well, I don't care. I mean, these guys just playing nuts. Anyway, again, going back to November, because, you know, it was all about jobs, right? The Republicans told us it's all about jobs. Michigan, one of the states hit hardest by unemployment. They elected a Republican governor, a guy named Rick Snyder. And he won by a big margin. I think it was 18 points. I don't even know where to go from there. He won by 18 points. Now you look at the fact that less than 3 months later, less than 3 months of the draconian budget proposals. Am I that boring?
Are you boring? No.
Anyway, he won in November by 18 points. And now you've got this whole budget thing. This whole stealing rights from workers. This whole anti-collective bargaining thing that I think is unconstitutional. Now what's going on is Snyder, who won by 18 points, now it looks like he's not going to be doing so well. In fact, the polling around there say he would lose big time. In some of the recent polling, voters have said, look, his targeting of collective bargaining rights is not something we're in favor of. In fact, almost 60% of the people in Michigan think that public employees should have the right to collectively bargain. Only 32% opposed. 49% of the people, and again, you know, this is right there at the halfway point. 49% of the voters favor a state constitutional amendment guaranteeing the right of collective bargaining, with only 37% opposed. So it's going to be kind of interesting. Because if you remember, as we discussed last night with Ian Millhiser from Think Progress Action, he pointed out that in Michigan, voters can amend the state constitution by petitioning and referendum. And evidently, it only takes about 10% of the electorate to place an amendment on the ballot to protect collective bargaining, and a simple majority to make it law. So it's kind of interesting to see how these different states have you know, different little wrinkles, like the recall efforts in Wisconsin, this in Michigan. In Ohio, they think they're going to be able to put it on the ballot and undo the assaults of Kasich. So while there are massive defeats going on for workers right now, while they're beating us down right now, there is an opportunity as we move forward, if we can take this time, if we can begin to come together and begin to do the organizing that needs to happen around this, because these folks are deadly serious. And in the end, what it means is larger redistribution of wealth. If they win, they win. If we win, we survive. We can feed our families. We can put roofs over their heads. And isn't that kind of what we want? Just a fair day's pay for a fair day's work? They don't see it that way. They see all of it as theirs. The spoils are theirs. When we come back, we're going to talk with Mark Carlin from BuzzFlash.org, one of my favorite websites, talking about some of the inequity in wealth and how we've seen the distribution of the spoils, if you will, the distribution of the wage that workers and the wealth that workers create being disproportionately going to the top. We're right back after this with Mark Carlin.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to Win,
the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
While much of the nation's attention has been focused on the ongoing protests and recall campaigns going on in the state of Wisconsin, the Badger State is only the tip of the iceberg when it comes to legislation targeting collective bargaining rights. Casting an eye out of the Midwest, you'll find reports of similar but smaller movements afoot. For example, in South Carolina, hundreds of protesters showed up on March 14th to express their concerns about budget proposals being made by Governor Nikki Haley. The call in South Carolina is for a moral budget that cuts special interest tax breaks ahead of plans to slash funding for important public services. Opponents say that $3.7 billion is lost in the current budget due to sales and service tax exemptions. In Maine yesterday, it was a lobby day for workers concerned about right-to-work legislation that is currently proposed in the legislature. The legislation being proposed in Maine has similar language as bills in other states that were written partially with the influence of a Virginia organization called the National Right to Work Committee. Employees in Maine are fighting the legislation because they've seen the numbers that have come out of other states that already have similar legislation. On average, right to work states spend less on school children, the average wages are more than $5,000 lower than non-right to work states, and those states average more than 19% of citizens living below the poverty rate. The national average in 2009 was 14.3%. Maine's rate was 16.9%. Meanwhile, in Indiana, 39 House Democrats continue to hide out in neighboring Illinois in opposition to the majority of the House Republican agenda. The legislators have been out of state for more than a month, and it's unknown when they'll return. The Democrats have said they won't return until Republicans can show they are willing to negotiate. But House Speaker Brian Bosma has repeated, often, that he won't make any compromises. While the Democrats waited out in an Illinois hotel, taxpayers continue to protest at the State House in Indianapolis. Today is day 30 of protests in that state. In nearby Missouri, the state Senate faced more than 500 workers on March 15th and watched as Republicans were unable to rally enough votes to bring right-to-work legislation in that state. The opposition saw members of the Republican side of the aisle defecting to their camp. These are only a handful of the states currently facing various forms of collective bargaining legislation. Many of these rallies and protests are expected to come to a head on April 4th, when employees and supporters around the country will gather in state capitals and major cities to give a voice to workers on the day Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated while protesting for the rights of sanitation workers in Memphis.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
As soon as you're born, they make you feel small by giving you no time instead of it all. Till the pain is so big you feel nothing at all.
It's class warfare. My class is winning, but they shouldn't be.
A working class hero is something to be.
The taxation system has tilted toward the rich and away from the middle class.
A working class hero is something to be.
You know, one of the things I liked about John Edwards, you know, pre-scandal, is that I thought he got it. Well, the reason I supported the guy is I thought he got it. He saw that there were very, very different, there are big differences in this country. There were those who lived in gated communities and flew on private jets and played golf at private clubs. And then there were the rest of us who struggled to make ends meet, who struggled to put their kids through college, who struggled every day just to attain this dream that used to be the American dream. And I read this piece over at BuzzFlash.com, A Tale of Two Americas. One lives on greed, the other America barely survives to live. And I got to talk to this guy. Mark Carlin is the editor of BuzzFlash.com, really a great website. Mark, thanks for taking time for me.
Rick, it's always a pleasure to be on your program.
You know, I look at this, and I think you hit it on the head. You've got, right now, you look at the bonuses on Wall Street, you look at the CEOs pocketing tens of millions of dollars, and you've got Republican governors across this country stealing bargaining rights away from workers. If there were ever two Americas, right there, it is very clear.
And on BuzzFlash at Truth Out, BuzzFlash is a part of Truth Out now, on that blog, if your readers want to go and look at the commentary, we compare the record year for bonuses for CEOs and in some of these larger companies, this is millions of dollars in bonuses. It's not like, oh, here's $50, you know, Christmas bonus. And
no jelly of the month club?
No jelly of the month club, Rick. And you compare that it was a record year for people who are on food stamps in the United States. And what the Republican governors want to do, best symbolized by Wisconsin, but in the news report that preceded your program, it was clear that the attacks on collective bargaining are occurring around the country, that this is a somewhat orchestrated effort to break unions and to drive union members who work for a livable wage and benefits into the poverty class. And
or as I call it, the desperation class.
The desperation class, the Walmart worker class. Walmart, as many of your listeners may know, actually in some states encourages its employees to get Medicaid for health insurance. The wages are so low. And also to apply for food stamps.
And a lot of them end up getting the earned income tax credit as well.
Well, so this is really a federal subsidy, a taxpayer subsidy of Walmart. If Walmart is using Medicaid in some of its locations as the health insurance for its employees who qualify for Medicaid because the pay is so low, then the taxpayers are subsidizing Walmart. This never comes out in these debates that the Republicans have. And it's very unfortunate because what we're seeing is that not only are they trying to break unions for political reasons, but they're driving the middle class downward in the United States. And after World War II, we had this great emergence of the strong, robust middle class in the post-World War II era. And the economy tilted toward the middle. It really was structured for the middle class.
Right. What you had is you had what Krugman called the Great Compression.
The Great Compression, yes. And what we're seeing now is a complete tilt toward a two-class economy, meaning the very wealthy and the poor and the working poor.
Well, going back to the way it should be, Mark, back to the feudal days, back to where we had feudal lords and you had, you know, the king and the aristocracy and then the peasants.
It is back to the type of governance and the type of class structure that the American Revolution fought against, basically, which was the old European system where you had an upper class and you had the servant class. And there was a tradesman class, but it wasn't that large. That was sort of the middle class of that time, and it was not a very large group of, in terms of percentage of population. The American Revolution was really about ending, in some ways, through democracy and freedom, the old class structure of Europe and really having this revolutionary political system where one person, one vote. That one would lead you to think would lead to an economic democracy, but in the past few decades, particularly with the emergence of the Reagan administration, what we've seen really is a return, as you said, Rick, to the European class system at the time of the revolution, which is really only two classes. In all these bills and all these states that are to take away collective bargaining from public employees are just the first step of breaking unions and forcing union members to become Walmart workers and get minimum wage and no benefits. And meanwhile, the same governors and legislatures are adamantly opposed to taxing the wealthy anymore. And what this means is the wealthy get wealthier, and the middle class gets poor. That's the bottom line.
Well, let me ask you this, Mark, because, you know, yesterday we talked about something Ralph Nader said, that, you know, basically the Democratic Party has looked at the labor movement as, well, you know, where else are you going to go? We're your only guy in town. But it's at a breaking point. Do you think the attacks in Wisconsin, Indiana, Ohio, New Jersey, all across the country will do, as Nader said, and by that snapback where labor begins a populist uprising?
I think the uprising in Wisconsin, which certainly was the largest, was an indication of the gut reaction and mad as hell feeling of union workers in Wisconsin, and teachers are being specifically targeted as public employees and teacher unions.
You know what I find funny, though? You know, you talk to some of the folks who were out there who actually voted for Walker, and here in the state of Pennsylvania, 51% of union members voted for Pat Toomey and voted for Republicans. At some point, is this that clarion call for labor to say, you need to talk to your members, you need to educate them, and or take a look at what you did?
I think you really saw a reaction that was orchestrated in Wisconsin on the national level. If you read about what happened in Wisconsin, it was clearly labor at the state level reacting, and then an outpouring of support, particularly from young people. The teachers were particularly strong. But even in Wisconsin, you saw farmers who took their tractors one Saturday and rode around in support of the protesters, which on that Saturday, I think the crowd reached an estimated 100,000 people. It was not the Democratic Party that was leading this charge.
Nope.
It was labor and
the working person. It was people who were mad as hell. We spent 8 days there in Madison. And really, to be honest, what the mainstream media, well, wait a second, the mainstream media didn't really cover it.
That's right.
We were there. We were the only media outlet in the Capitol, broadcasting from the Capitol, while the people have occupied the Capitol. There's nobody else. And I'm going, why is it that the mainstream corporate controlled media has basically turned their back and ignored probably the biggest labor story in at least 30 years?
It's one of the biggest natural emergence of protest. Tea Party only had 70,000 in Washington, and that was a national gathering when Glenn Beck held his day there, and he had all that airtime on Fox News. There was all the infrastructure of the Koch Brothers organization that brought people there, and they can only get 70,000. Here you had 100,000 residents of the state of Wisconsin who gathered in crowds of various sizes, but that one Saturday reached 100,000, were occupying the rotunda for quite a long time. And as you say, the mainstream media ignored the story for the most part. It was a phenomenal story. Just if you were a news hound and were allowed to report something that really was news and really was an emergence of something we haven't seen in the United States. As you said, in recent time, a lot of union members have voted for Republicans, particularly since Reagan. And I think what happened here was an economic kick to the gut. And ultimately, union members who voted Republican sometimes on social issues really decided that the economic issue was the paramount issue, and so they crossed back, if you want to say that, to the Democratic side.
Right.
But I don't think this is so much about parties as it is about protecting the rights of the working person to a living wage and benefits.
Yeah, but here's the thing. During the 2008 election, you know, President Obama ran on a platform of, I'm a union guy. You know, in fact, I think out of all the pundits in the history of the country, I think he said union and touted the union movement more than anybody. And yet we've seen no action. In fact, we haven't even really seen a very strong response to what happened in Wisconsin from him. And that's what's frustrating to me. We haven't, you know, Democrats are supposed to be our friends, but there's no, you know, we scratch their back, but there's no reciprocation.
I think that the workers in Wisconsin, the union workers, have shown that the squeaky wheel gets heard at least in some places, perhaps not in the mainstream media, but politically, that was quite a show of force.
Yep.
And I think had a real ripple effect and slowed things down nationally. Obviously didn't stop them, you know, the Wisconsin vote to repeal collective bargaining for public employees is being contested right now, and other states are, you know, attacking, as your news report before your program indicated, the collective bargaining ability and right of unions, public employees. Many states are attacking it, but I think Wisconsin showed that unions weren't going to take this lying down.
Right.
And that was a very important factor. Politically, that was felt by the Republicans. And I think the Democrats realized to a certain extent, you saw in Wisconsin that, you know, 14 state senators fled to Illinois. In the news report before your program, they're talking about there's a number of Indiana Democrats who are still in Illinois.
Yep.
And at the local level in states, union contact with legislators is much stronger than with congressmen, congresswomen, and senators, and the president, and so forth. There's a much stronger interaction and tie, particularly because the union fundraising in states has more of an impact. It's more of a factor in state races than it is federally. And so you find that many states, the Democratic legislators are much more closely aligned with the unions than on the national level. And I think you're seeing this play out now, certainly in Wisconsin, Indiana, and some other states.
Yep, it'll definitely be interesting moving forward. Again, the title of the piece, A Tale of Two Americas. One lives on greed. The other America barely survives to live, by Mark Carlin, editor of BuzzFlash at Truthout. Great site. I suggest everyone get over there and check out that stuff. Mark, I appreciate the time, brother. I got to take a break here.
Thank you, Rick.
All right. We're right back after this with your calls. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Defender of the working class majority. Rick Smith. The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-888-520-RICK. That's 1-888-520-7425.
At last, some uplifting economic news, a sign that the economy is really starting to hum again. Forbes magazine reports that there are 199 more billionaires this year than last. Moreover, the combined wealth of the world's 1,210 billionaires now totals $4.5 trillion, up by nearly $1 trillion from a year ago. So see, the economy is not stuck in the doldrums, as so many party poopers keep saying. Also, with an average of $3.7 billion in their bank accounts, you can just bet that these uber-rich folks will be spending like crazy, and you know what that means, don't you? It means that their vast piles of wealth will soon begin to tinkle down on you and me. Just you wait and see. And wait, and wait, and keep waiting. Workers in our country have been dramatically increasing their productivity since the highly ballyhooed economic recovery began about 20 months ago, generating billions of dollars in new wealth. Yet, wages have stayed stagnant. Practically none of the increased wealth from worker productivity gains has gone to the workers. Instead, 94% of the money has been siphoned off by the corporate powers for such things as fattening profits at a record pace and jacking up CEO pay to exorbitant levels. Also, nearly $2 trillion of the gains have simply been stashed in the corporate vaults rather than using it for wage hikes or new job creation. And even the little bit of job creation that is taking place is bottom-heavy. 4% of the jobs lost in the recent economic crash were high-paying positions, but 49% of the new jobs are low-paying. This is Jim Hightower saying, so we see corporations and billionaires wallowing in fabulous new wealth while productive workers fall out of the middle class. That's not a recovery by any means. It's a robbery. What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.com.
Who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters? Rick Smith.
The rich pay too much taxes. The poor get way too much. Instead of schools, build prisons and lock the children up. We won't believe again, because God is a Republican.
That's right, he's a Republican. He's not one of them there Muslims. Herman Cain, talk show host, Republican presidential candidate, and former pizza magnate, evidently says he has no problem with the peaceful Muslims, but he just has a problem with those who are trying to convert the rest of us to the Muslim religion. He says, I resent that. He admits that his position, he says it was sound, and he explained it because based on the little knowledge that I have, the Muslim religion, you know, they have an objective to convert all infidels or kill them. So I don't want that. I don't want them to do that. Acknowledge that not all Muslims share, the view. But he doesn't want to take any chances, saying, quote, I know that there are some peaceful Muslims out there who don't go around preaching and practicing that. Well, unfortunately, we can't sit back and tolerate the radical ones simply because we know that there are some of them who don't believe in that aspect of the Muslim religion. So their role is to be allowed to practice their religion freely, just like we should be allowed to practice our religion freely, and not to convert the rest of us. Am I the only one who really wants to reach across the table and slap this guy? I mean, how many times have you seen reports of, and look, I think a lot of the religious groups do some good work, going to these, to third world countries to feed people and do some, you know, some things. But it's always here's a bowl of rice. I know you're on the verge of death, from starvation. Here's a bowl of rice and you can have it. If I can preach the book to you and convert you to our religion, am I the only one who sees that? Yet, I don't think Mr. Cain would have a problem with that.
They do that in this country, actually. I mean, how many Christian organizations, especially the ones that feed and clothe and house, how many of those, in the end, after they give him something to eat and maybe give him some clothes, try to proselytize them? Pretty much all of them do.
Well, I mean, the guy down on the corner down here, he's out there waving the book and yelling and screaming and the world's coming to an end on May 22nd.
So that's their American right, freedom of religion, but somehow, because a Muslim does it, that's wrong.
Well, according to Herman Cain, and he could be our president. Yeah, there's a chance of that.
I don't think so. Have you heard him do the show? Have you heard him? Well, you don't listen to her.
I don't listen to any of this.
Laura Ingraham, and he sits in for her. I think he's a poor substitute, actually.
Well,
that's just me.
The good thing is you look at people like Cain, and he is kind of pushing, I think, what researchers have said in this study using census data that religion may be set for extinction. The study found a steady rise in those claiming no religious affiliation at all. And I think it's because of crackpots like Cain. Look, I think people have a spiritual connection to whoever it is that they believe in. I want people, going back to the whole commandment thing, I want people to follow the Ten Commandments. I want them to be decent human beings, know the Ten Commandments, not have to be reminded. I say, and I would be willing to fund this. I think I would.
that if you need to be constantly reminded, I would be willing to pay tattoo artists to put it right on your hand. Like Sarah Palin. Every time you needed a memory, there it is, right there on the hand. You know, I'm feeling the need to steal something. Oh, right there, do not steal. Got it, right there. I'm feeling the need to cuss out my mother. Oh, wait a minute. No. Honor thy father and thy mother. Oh, can't do that. You know, I'm thinking of, you know, I'm lusting after that beautiful lass across the way. Oh, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife. Don't want to do that. No. And the Jaguar that she's driving, man, that's a sin too. Can't covet the goods. Jeez. You know, again, you know, it would be nice to have the checklist right there on their hand, and I would be willing to pay for that. I would be.
That lusting thing might be tough. It might be a recurring.
You know, I got to be honest. I'm in favor of the lusting thing. I'm in favor of it because it drives the economy. I'm in favor of the coveting thy neighbor's goods. I'm in favor of that. Gee, I'd like to have that. That's good for the economy. It gets consumers out into the market, buying stuff that people create. That's what advertising is. The entire advertising community, all of that marketing stuff would come to a screeching halt if we followed the Ten Commandments. And thank goodness that someone had the wherewithal not to post them everywhere, because then we would know. Could just completely end our entire way of life if we just followed those rules. So now here's another part of this, which is kind of funny. Only in Texas, and I'm kind of thinking about being a Texas Christian, because, well, I don't like Herman Cain's, I don't like the hate theology. I kind of like Crystal Dean, her pole fitness for Jesus class. Evidently a couple times every month, on Sunday, they go to her pole dancing haven. Evidently, she used to be a stripper. Now she found the good Lord, and now she's bringing pole dancing home to Jesus. Yes, yes. And you know, you feel dirty for watching women swing around on the pole and hang upside down and gyrate around the pole. But now it's all fine. It's all good because we're doing it for Jesus.
Does she have her own church now?
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, not in her own church, but it's a program with the church that, you know, they bring people in and they don't do any praying or any service or anything. Wow. They do play some upbeat church music, though. So some contemporary Christian music, which is kind of good, I guess. But I find it interesting, you know, that, you know, on Sunday they do some pole dancing, which I got to be honest. And, you know, maybe I hope my wife's listening. Maybe we can go pole. Maybe she could take up pole dancing for Jesus. This woman's got an idea. This could save a lot of marriages. You want to make marriage forever? Pole dancing. You know, if a guy can come home and see his wife pole dancing, he doesn't have to go to the strip club. And he'd save a whole bunch of money. Either that or she'd make a whole bunch of money. One way or the other. But, you know, again, I make fun of this. And look, I hope nobody emails me, rick@thericksmithshow.com, complaining that I'm being somehow sexist. I'm not. I think it's funny. I think it's hysterical. That, you know, this woman, and good for her, she got out of the stripper's life. There's nothing wrong with being a stripper. But she got out of it, she found the good book, and now she's, you know, basically sharing her love of the pole with everyone else. And what could be wrong with that? What could be wrong with that, Jake? 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're going to take a quick break. Right back with Mike Fedor, candidate for Cumberland County Commissioner. Could be the next commish. We're right back after this.
We know those holiday bills can really pile up and hit you with double-digit interest rates or fees that start to snowball. Next thing you know, you're buried in a mountain of debt. Dig out by using our 3.9 annual percentage rate Visa balance transfer. Good through December 31st, 2012. That's a really big deal. And you heard that right. Our really big deal, 3.9% APR, is good through December 31st, 2012. And we don't charge you a balance transfer fee. So if you used any other credit card to pay for your holiday purchases, move those high interest rate balances to your PSEC Visa. The sooner you get in on this really big deal, the more you'll save. Financing Lent is what we do best. Talk with us. Call 800-LOAN-555 or go to PSEC.com/Lent to get in on our really big deal Visa balance transfer. Don't wait. Start saving.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
Your working class radio experience.
Where hard work, common sense, and rational thoughts
are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
Working hard to make a left. Rich and out of poverty. Father, son, left a cameo. Blue denim, head as vain. Oh, 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 he's a working class man.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Also, you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I do answer all emails personally. I look forward to the interaction. Today, there were a bunch of students and faculty members out of Chippensburg University protesting our Governor Corporate's budget, which is going to cut 54% from higher education. You want to track jobs? That is not the way to do it, folks. But this is what it's going to take. Folks out in the street, people marching and raising a little hell. The guy who could quite possibly be the next commish, the next Cumberland County Commissioner, Mike Fedora, is on the line. He's a candidate. Mike, thanks for taking time for us, brother.
Rick, thanks for having me on tonight.
I understand you were out at the rally there with the students and the faculty at Shippensburg.
Proudly, yes. I was excited to see so many students and faculty out today in a great informational picket. They also had a little kiosk set up inside the library, and they were signing people up to get more information, but also collecting these little postcards, people writing personal messages to their state senators and state reps saying they won't stand for cuts like this to public education. It was exciting.
You know, we've had this conversation a couple of times in the past, this idea of visionless leadership. And again, I look at this 54%. The Republicans said they were going to create jobs. This is not, in my opinion, the way you lure corporations to this state. This is not how you begin entrepreneurs. This is the wrong path.
Yeah, I mean, this not only doesn't create jobs, it ensures that if we do create jobs, they're not going to be good-paying jobs that can actually support families. I mean, when you cut the state system of higher education to the bone, like the governor is trying to do, you're trying to take it from where it was started in the 80s, where the state took on two-thirds of the funding share. Now the governor is talking about taking the state share to one-sixth. That means that all that difference is going to be either made up by cuts in programs, cuts in faculty, cuts in degree offerings, or, passing the cost on to students. And a lot of working class, middle class students like myself, like my wife, we wouldn't have been able to afford college if it wasn't for the support of Pennsylvania for a state system of higher ed. So we are definitely under attack right now, and we have to fight back.
You know, I look at that and I go, the reality here is tuition costs have skyrocketed the last several years. And this will only exacerbate the problem. For me, I think part of the solution is getting away from privatization, which to me, all of this, all of this, school vouchers for K through 12, cutting of state funding to public universities is moving us in that direction to privatizing education, profitizing education, and basically taking it out of the reach of middle class, working class folks.
Yeah, you know, this is the modern form of deregulation, right? We watched and saw what deregulation has done time and time again to industries in this country. Now they're trying to do it with a public institution like education. I mean, there's a reason that public education is written into our state constitution. Our founders saw it as a top priority for our economic health, our civic health. You know, we need a well-educated, well-organized residents of the Commonwealth. And you know, not everyone's going to go to college, but, you know, Shippensburg University also plays a vital role for the economy in Cumberland County. The activity those students engage in down there supports local businesses, ensures that there is, you know, economic activity down there. It's a vital part of the economy. So the state system of higher education, public schools, they do more than just simply educate students. They are a vital part of our regional economy. The governor's cuts would take more than $10 million out of Cumberland County's economy alone. $10 million. Can you imagine that? What's that going to do to the economic health of Cumberland County, which is just trying to turn around from 3 years of recession?
Well, I mean, the next question I was going to ask you, as candidate for Cumberland County Commissioner, how is that going to affect the job that you'll be doing after this election as commissioner of the county, when you're talking about taking a good portion of that wealth away? And also, as the K through 12 money goes away, you're going to see school districts who are going to have to raise tuition or are going to have to raise property taxes. This is a whole mess.
It is an absolute mess. I've said time and time again, number one, it's not enough just to elect the next board of commissioners. You can elect me. You can elect any one of the seven candidates. That won't be enough to fight back against this. We have to be organized. We need to be mobilized. We need to be focused on what our priorities are and ensuring that county government, state government reflects those values. So step one, you know, see it more than just an election. It's a time to be organized and to join a movement. Secondly, we're going to need real leadership. We're going to need bold, visionary leadership to take on the next 4 years. I knock on people's doors right now and I tell them I want to be the next Democratic Cumberland County Commissioner, and they say, why? Don't you see how awful the problems are? And I say, you know what, we're going to need someone who's brave, who's got the courage to stand up and face these problems down. I believe I could be that person with their support. Now, it's going to be critical, right? We've got to make sure that our commissioners are working hand in hand with the leaders of our school districts. That means the superintendents, the principals, the association presidents, and the rank-and-file teachers, the parents. We all need to come together and figure out if the governor is going to try to suck the money out of these public schools, how we can fight back and organize and protect them. That also means that our local businesses have got to become staunch, vocal allies in the community for our public schools. It isn't just about the public sector, private sector. Everyone's got to be working together. Because the types of investments we need to make in these counties, Cumberland, Dauphin, York, in the next 4 years are going to come from the state, the county, business, individuals, everyone working together to get this economy moving again.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're Mike Fedor, Democratic candidate for Cumberland County Commissioner. Mike, you got a website?
I do. It's www.votefedor.com. That's F-E-D-O-R. We launched that site about a month ago, and we had some exciting news today we can talk about. But on our website are tools to get involved with the campaign. You can sign up to volunteer. You can tell us you want a yard sign. We only have about 7-8 weeks until Election Day, so it's critical if you want to support bold, visionary candidates like myself, you got to reach out right now. You got to get involved. It's critical we get people's help to knock on doors, make phone calls. You can also follow our Twitter stream, our Facebook page. It's all out there. We're trying to be organized and helping people connect with a very local race.
And we'll put a link at our site at thericksmithshow.com. You can just click on Mike Fedor's name. It'll take you to his website. You know, as you're out there knocking on doors and as you're talking to people, is this budget issue front and foremost on their mind? What are some of the issues that they're talking about?
Yeah, first off, people are concerned about the economy. They want to know what we're going to do to make sure that there are jobs created in the next 4 years. And we're getting these reports, right? We get these unemployment reports that say strange things, like the unemployment rate went down, but we didn't really create any jobs. How is that possible? There's this unease, generally speaking, that people just don't feel like they've heard about this recovery, but they're not really seeing it. So, you know, first and foremost, people are wondering where the jobs are going to come from. Secondly, people want to know what you're going to do to defend the vital family services that they love and may not realize that the county provides, like our library system, our nursing home and senior care, as well as our senior center activities. We have an incredible juvenile probation system in Cumberland County that is innovative and works to keep kids out of jail, out of the correctional system, and actually, you know, getting on the track to recovery and having productive adult lives. These are incredibly important vital programs we cannot afford to cut. And they're going to want to know, you know, what are my values? What am I going to do to make sure that those programs they love continue to be offered by the county? And, you know, finally, you know, I've been knocking on doors all over the county. So I'm out in Southampton Township, way out west, and they want to know what you're going to do about agriculture. This is an industry that is under attack. Generations are starting to move away from it because they're just not sure that it's going to survive for the next 50 years. I want to see us do some really innovative things, like set a goal that 20% of all produce, agricultural goods that people buy in the county come from local sources. So we do a field-to-family dinner plates program that ensures that people know that we grow strawberries in Cumberland County, that we have peaches and apple orchards, and that they should be asking questions about, you know, where does Giant or Wegmans or these other stores, where do they get their produce, and demand that they get some local produce as well so we can meet these local, buy local, sell local, compete global goals.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. That's a great plan. I see on your website you've gotten some pretty powerful endorsements lately.
Yeah, we had a really exciting announcement this morning. U.S. Congressman Mark Crist from Pennsylvania's 12th Congressional District publicly announced his support. We're just thrilled to have Mark's support. As you may or may not know, Mark succeeded the late Congressman Jack Murtha, who was the dean of the, not only the Pennsylvania delegation, but was somewhat the conscience of the United States House of Representatives. Mark has done an incredible job continuing Jack Murtha's legacy of offering incredible services, really reaching out to the seniors in that district as well as veterans. Jack Murtha really saw them as just the most important people to really make sure that government's doing good things for. I think county government has a similar role, and Mark and I have talked about my vision for Cumberland County government, and I think he's been excited by it. We've worked hand-in-hand with some issues in the past, and so when he offered his support, I was just thrilled to have it. So we have Mark Critz. We've also got the support of the Central Labor Council in Harrisburg, the Building Trades Council. We've also publicly announced the support of the Teamsters 776 and AFSCME District Council 89. So there's I think there'll be a couple more important endorsements, some non-labor endorsements as well, and there's some other organizations that are interested in this race, and we're going to fight hard to make sure that we're reaching out to a very wide coalition of people, because I want to be a commissioner that really works hard to carry this county forward, and I think we can do that by reaching out to a diverse group of voters and organizations that have you know, vital interests in our community.
And again, the website?
www.votethedoor.com. Election day is May 17th, and you can go on there and sign up for our email newsletter and make a donation, do all kinds of things. It's a really beautiful website. I really love it.
And we'll put that on our site at thericksmithshow.com. I know you're out there working hard. I know you're knocking doors and kissing babies and doing all that. You could probably use some help. So if anyone wants to help out, donate a couple of bucks, get involved, votefedor.com is the place to do it. Mike, always great talking to you, brother.
Hey, Rick, I love what you do. Keep it up. Keep the fight up, though. It's only beginning, and we have a long road ahead, but just, you know, stay tough, man.
All righty. Thanks so much, Mike. Again, votefedor.com. There's a link at our site at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Mike Fedora's name. Take you right there. We're going to take a quick break. Back with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
Our workers' comp system is a confusing maze of rules, delays, and loopholes, where workers struggle to collect what they are owed. Bills don't get paid, and families struggle to put food on the table after a serious work injury. What happens when you're injured on the job in Pennsylvania? Most people think you just apply for workers' comp, and you'll get paid for lost time, and your medical bills will be covered. Sadly, in Pennsylvania, that is not the case. The good news is, it doesn't have to be that way. Hi, I'm Ron Calhoun, and I'm a Central Pennsylvania workers' compensation attorney. It's my job to make sure injured workers receive the benefits they deserve. In the last 20 years, I have helped hundreds of Pennsylvania workers and their families after they've suffered from a work injury. If you've been injured on the job, I'd like the chance to show you how I might be able to do the same for you. Why not find out what you're rightfully owed? Call me at 717-695-4722. You have nothing to lose and much to gain. Call me at 695-4722.
Everybody ready? Let's do this!
We're here at Carter McRae Elementary School. We teach exercise every day, and we love it.
Capital Blue Cross helps sponsor the program, so one of our medical directors, Rick Hammer, dropped by.
Capital Blue Cross is interested in supporting initiatives like this because we're trying to build healthy lifestyles, and the best place to start is with children.
It means a lot to teacher Dawn Evans.
Sometimes exercise is the one thing that a child does really successfully, and to start their day with success and with smiles, it impacts the rest of the day.
Keith Corrigan, who leads the exercises, agrees.
It's wonderful. I'm glad Capital Blue Cross did step in. It's good for the kids. It's good for the teachers. It's good for the school.
When you care more, you do more.
If it's the right thing to do, then we like to try to find a way to do it.
I can't hear you. Did you get a workout this morning?
Capital Blue Cross is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
The AP reported a man tried to open a bank account before robbing the bank, only here in central Pennsylvania, I guess. He handed over two forms of identification because he's going to open up this bank account. Then Harrisburg police say it's 35-year-old Daniel Reynes walked into the bank and told the teller that, you know what, this is a stick-up. We're going to rob the place. He drove off with a couple of bucks in his pocket, hit another vehicle. So he's going to... he's going to have some real problems. And I guess my question is, what happened to the legendary bank robbers? I mean, we've seen a bunch of these dimwits going into banks doing some pretty stupid stuff like this. You know, what happened to the John Dillingers? What happened to the Bonnie and Clyde? Where's Pretty Boy Floyd? How about Babyface Nelson? Where are these colorful criminals who were smart enough not to hand over two forms of identification? Come on now. But then, you know, I look at this. And it's those kind of legendary crooks who figured out that the best way to rob a bank is not to put a gun in somebody's face. It's to simply become the CEO or become a Wall Street hedge fund manager. That's the best way to rob the bank because that's where the real theft is going on. This idiot in Harrisburg, he's going to spend years in jail for a handful of tokens, for a couple of bucks. But you look at these criminals on Wall Street, the ones who took us for billions. We're not giving them bonuses and patting them on the back for the bank job that they did. And I look in December of 2009, the AP reported that banks that got taxpayer bailout money, the TARP money, awarded their top executives $1.6 billion in salaries, bonuses, and other benefits. You know, other benefits that you and I, we never get. Cash bonuses, like stock options, use of the company jet, use of the company chauffeur and limousine, home security, country club memberships, you name it. They're getting these perks. Yet these are the people who've crashed the economy, and we are rewarding them for this failure. You want a colorful bank robber? Look at Lloyd Blankenfein. President and Chief Executive Officer at Goldman Sachs, who in 2008 took $54 million. $54 million. His company's top five executives took $242 million. If that is not a heist, I don't know what it is. And they tell us, well, you know, we need to hand out these big bonuses because we need to attract, you know, we need to attract the best candidates. You know, like John Thain, the CEO of Merrill Lynch, you know, the one that collapsed. Merrill Lynch lost $7.8 billion. But since he's been around, the year that, and you'll love this, the year he took over was December of 2007. Just a short year. His salary was right around $60,000. He got a nice $15 million signing bonus and $68 million stock option. Nothing wrong with that. Here's the thing. They got $10 billion of our money. He crashed the economy. One of these people who crashed the economy. Let's not forget right now, you look at this M&I bank situation. Their CEO, Mark Furlong, according to Bank Insider, Business Insider, this bank executive took TARP money, never paid it back, and now he's getting $18 million if he's fired. You want to talk about a golden parachute? You know, the reason that they're against contracts is these people know how good they are. This guy wrote into his contract that if he leaves, fired, whatever, they got to pay him $18 million. You go back to Robert Nardelli, who was fired from Home Depot. $210 million to get fired. How do I get a good gig like that? How do I get fired and end up with a nice bonus? I don't know, man. You look at this, and it's amazing that we allow this stuff to go on, and I guess we seem to revel in it, say, yeah, go ahead. You deserve it, Mr. CEO, and you know what? For your trouble, all those stock options, we're going to tax those at 15% for capital gains because you shouldn't have to pay too much. And in the salary that you actually do take, we're going to only get taxed at 35%. You know, because you need a little extra cheese on your burger. Amazing stuff, man. It's frustrating on so many levels when you see the kind of theft that's going on in this country. And we're talking about cutting education programs. We're talking about cutting food stamps and cutting programs that help people. Because, you know, we need to have our billionaire class. Our billionaires, they need their jet. Our billionaires, you know, they're struggling. And they need your help. Kind of reminds me back in the 80s when Rolling Stone magazine had a big ad wanting everybody to contribute to Paul McCartney to get him over the billion hump. Because poor Paul needed that extra oomph over the billion mark. And now we see where half of that went.
Well, you're talking about the situation with the Bank of Montreal that bought M&I Bank. And you talked about the TARP. Just a mere $1.3 billion they didn't repay yet. And you talked about bonuses. You talked about Fong getting his nice fat $18 million. There was an additional $65 million that was given to 15 executives of M&I Bank. It'll work if you can get it. A bank that pretty much failed. And what do they get? They get golden parachutes. Just doesn't make sense, Rick.
But that's because they have contracts. They're not stupid. Look, you know, these people, these CEOs, they're not stupid. They used to be the bank robbers of old. They figured out the best place is not on the handle end of the gun. The best place is with the pen in hand.
Oh, by the way, just to give you an idea how bad they failed, the stock at one time back in June of 2008 was $50. It's now down to $7.70. Lost 85% of its value.
And we should be rewarding these people. Because, look, they stayed around. Granted, it took $1.7 billion of our money to keep them afloat so they could get their big payout. But, hey, they did it anyway, man. It's great. It's good for them. But this is what we're told. And now we need to tighten our belts. Shared sacrifice. Isn't that what they keep telling us? We need to raise the retirement age for Social Security because we need to tighten our belts. Shared sacrifice. Here in the state of Pennsylvania, they want to cut 54% from higher education. Shared sacrifice, you know? Need to help out a little bit. You're going to cut $1 billion from K through 12 education. You got to remember, tighten the belt, man. Tighten the belt. Things are tough. Times are tough. It's just like your kitchen table. When you lose your job, you lose some income, you got to eat mac and cheese instead of steak. That's just how it is. Tighten the belt. Yet, we've got people in this country. And this is, you know, you say, Rick, you're talking class war. Yeah, absolutely. And I think Warren Buffett's right. There is a class war going on in this country. It's the working people who are being assaulted. It's the people who are losing the war who don't realize they're in a war.
And the interesting thing is, now think about it, workers have been under assault. Collective bargaining is under assault. How about the contracts that they have with their companies? When was the last time you saw one of them challenged by stockholders? And you wonder why there isn't a stockholder revolt with some of these companies.
You know, and the thing is you look at what happened in Michigan. The governor there wants to create kings. He wants feudal lords to be able to come in and set aside all those pesky contracts. You know, because contracts are bad for you, the working people. You poor, you folks don't understand contracts. That's what it is. You know, it's those CEOs who need them because, you know, contracts are complicated instruments. And we only need to have them for people who understand how to use them to enrich themselves, which they've done quite nicely. If you look at the distribution of wealth in this country, and again, going back to Mark Carlin's piece, the fact that we have two Americas, yet you got folks in the working class who really are the ones who don't get it. You know, the people who listen to Beck and Limbaugh, and they've been sold this bill of good that, you know what, if you're not doing well, you're just not working hard enough. You know, the same thing they were telling the coal miners back 100 years ago. You know what, if you can't feed your family, you're just not working hard enough. You're not running enough coal. Well, wait a minute. Running enough coal. Oh, yeah, Don Blankenship, the guy, Massey Energy. That was only a couple of years ago. We run coal here. Coal pays the bills. So never mind all that safety stuff. Don't need that shenanigans. What we need to run coal. But we're going back to those days, folks. We are heading backwards. Every advancement that my great-grandparents and grandparents fought for is being stolen from us. This education, people fought and died for this. You know, I can remember a guy I knew had a picture of three kids with, you know, who were obviously breaker boys, you know, the kids who, you know, sifted through the rubble coming out of the coal mine, pulling out the rocks from the coal, doing the separating, losing fingers and hands and feet, you know, just little things like that, with their face all smudged and blackened with coal dust, with a caption of, "We just want an education." How did we go from fighting so passionately for it to saying, "Oh yeah, Governor, go ahead, cut $1 billion. Go ahead, Governor. Yes, yeah, we need that. It's those greedy teachers."
No, actually, it's more than that. He's cutting $1 billion from the budget for higher education, but he's also cutting $1 billion from the money coming back to the school districts. And in the case of Penn State, you mentioned Mike Fedor mentioned Shippensburg as being not only a school for education and learning, but it also provides jobs. And when you start cutting back on money coming in from the state, there's going to be job loss. Look at Penn State, massive job loss could possibly up there. And when you look at Penn State with all its satellites, they're going to have to start shutting down some of those operations. That means jobs.
Well, they're just lazy people anyway. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break when we come back. We're going to talk about energy policy. You look at what's going on in Libya. You look at all of the stuff that's going on, gas prices through the roof. We're going to have the conversation we should have had 30 years ago. We're right back after this.
Not right wing, just right.
Rick Smith Show. Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. While much of the nation's attention has been focused on the ongoing protests and recall campaigns going on in the state of Wisconsin, the Badger State is only the tip of the iceberg when it comes to legislation targeting collective bargaining rights. Casting an eye out of the Midwest, you'll find reports of similar but smaller movements afoot. For example, in South Carolina, hundreds of protesters showed up on March 14th to express their concerns about budget proposals being made by Governor Nikki Haley. The call in South Carolina is for a moral budget that cuts special interest tax breaks ahead of plans to slash funding for important public services. Opponents say that $3.7 billion is lost in the current budget due to sales and service tax exemptions. In Maine yesterday, it was a lobby day for workers concerned about right-to-work legislation that is currently proposed in the legislature. The legislation being proposed in Maine has similar language as bills in other states that were written partially with the influence of a Virginia organization called the National Right to Work Committee. Employees in Maine are fighting the legislation because they've seen the numbers that have come out of other states that already have similar legislation. On average, right-to-work states spend less on school children, the average wages are more than $5,000 lower than non-right-to-work states, and those states average more than 19% of citizens living below the poverty rate. The national average in 2009 was 14.3%. Maine's rate was 16.9%. Meanwhile, in Indiana, 39 House Democrats continue to hide out in neighboring Illinois in opposition to the majority of the House Republican agenda. The legislators have been out of state for more than a month, and it's unknown when they'll return. The Democrats have said they won't return until Republicans can show they are willing to negotiate, but House Speaker Brian Bosma has repeated, often, that he won't make any compromises. While the Democrats waited out in an Illinois hotel, taxpayers continue to protest at the State House in Indianapolis. Today is day 30 of protests in that state. In nearby Missouri, the state Senate faced more than 500 workers on March 15th and watched as Republicans were unable to rally enough votes to bring right-to-work legislation in that state. The opposition saw members of the Republican side of the aisle defecting to their camp. These are only a handful of the states currently facing various forms of collective bargaining legislation. Many of these rallies and protests are expected to come to a head on April 4th, when employees and supporters around the country will gather in state capitals and major cities to give a voice to workers on the day Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated while protesting for the rights of sanitation workers in Memphis.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Demanding the super rich to pay their fair share for once. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. You know, the Obama administration recently approved the first deep water oil and gas exploration plan since last year's oil well blowout. And Mark Schulfstein of the Times-Picayune writes that the emulsified oil mousse, and tar balls from an unknown source were washing up on the beaches of Grand Isle to West Timblar Island along the Gulf of Mexico, a stretch of about 30 miles. He wrote this yesterday. It's heading west Monday afternoon, according to a Louisiana official. The state is testing the material to find out if it matches oil from last April's BP Deepwater Horizon disaster. The oil response rescue workers are out there, and they're saying under the direction of the Coast Guard that it's coming ashore more and more. So you know you look at the fact that. More oil news, just got to get to this, new oil out there. There has been a shipwreck on Nightingale Island in the South Atlantic. 150 tons of crude
are spilling into the ocean, according to NPR. And this spill is threatening about half the world's population of rockenhopper penguins. And I know what people are saying. Ah, screw them. I need to get to work. I need to get to work with my Hummer. Or as Bush used to say in his bit.
A bill that encourages consumption.
Yes, sir. We need an energy bill that encourages consumption. Interesting stuff. I've got Dan Karas on the line. He was the 2010 Green Party candidate in Illinois' 14th congressional district. There has got to be a better way. Dan, thanks for taking time for me, brother.
Hey, Rick, I certainly appreciate the time on the radio.
You know, I look at this, a couple of spills going on in New Orleans, the Gulf of Mexico, with this Libya thing going on. We're still in Iraq. It's still in Afghanistan. We're all over the world protecting these oil lines because we're hooked on the juice.
Well, that certainly is a problem. When you take a look at the amount of wealth that has left the American workers over the last 30 years since we had the first major oil crisis, and what have we done, to get us out of that situation so far? Well, absolutely nothing. And during my campaign, I brought up the idea of let's work similar to what John Kennedy did. You know, he challenged the United States to land the man on the moon within 10 years.
Yep.
Why can't we challenge ourselves to come up with a new transportation system that doesn't inconvenience people? They would still have their individual vehicles and such. I've heard public transportation, that type of thing. Our country just couldn't do just public transportation. I mean, there's no way we could do that without a massive change in, taking everybody from the rural areas and the suburbs and put them into, urban areas, and, that's just not going to work. So can't we come up with a system that would replace what we're doing now? And I thought about this and did some research. Found a company in California who has come up with a battery exchange system for electric vehicles.
Okay.
And they're working with the Dutch, and I think Israel, is another country that they're working pilot projects with. And basically what it is you take a vehicle and you have a massive battery in it. I'm looking at the potential, and again, we're not stupid people. We've got some brilliant people in this country. If we can land a man on the moon, if we can take an entire country, put an interstate, transportation system, the length and breadth of the country, if we could put up, a rail system that goes across the country, can't we come up with a new way of giving ourselves transportation?
Well, I think we can, but the question is, one, do we have the will, and two, will the corporate masters allow it?
Well, there you go. That's the problem. And, you were talking your earlier hour about the transfer of wealth to the rich. And, it doesn't take a genius to figure out that the rest of us are paying for it. But if we had the political will, and again, it's going to take the people to do it, which is something that, it's going to be up to the citizens to say, hey, you know what? This isn't a bad idea. I'm going to take it to my congressman. Take it to my, state senator, whoever, and propose this and see if we couldn't get something going.
And where's that tipping point? I mean, I thought $4 a gallon would have pushed us in that direction. And I thought that was the squeal point where people would finally buy into it. Where do you see that?
Well, I think it's going to, unfortunately, take even more than what we've already gone through. I firmly believe that the increase in oil a few years ago when we were paying, $140 or $150 a barrel because of, all of the problems entailed, and we were paying $3.50 to almost, I think some areas in the country a couple years ago were paying $4 a gallon. I think when you had that massive transfer of disposable income put into oil barrels, that was, I think, a good portion and problem why we wound up in the recession we did. My question is, now that we've got, you know, the price of gas up close to $4 a gallon, $4 a gallon now, and we're not even into summer yet, if it gets up to $5 a gallon, do we put this country and, you know, the rest of the world for that matter, into another recession?
Well, I
think that's
a
fear that I can see. And the problem is, like you said, you know, why don't we have an energy policy to change this? I mean, we've had 30 years, and what's our main goal now? Drill, baby, drill, or everybody ride public transportation. You know, we don't seem to have a plan in between.
Right. It's either drill, baby, drill, or ride our bikes.
Yeah, and this is where I thought what I was looking at, and this isn't my idea. This is a number of programs that are already in place. It's just a matter of putting them together into a system. Like I said, we could work for the next 10 years in providing the infrastructure for the electric vehicles while we're ramping up the capability of building the electric vehicles and also working on making more efficient batteries so you could get vehicles that would go, let's say, 200 miles.
Well, let me ask you this.
Sure.
Because, you know, some of the knocks against the electric vehicle are that, you know, here in this state anyway, we burn coal to make electricity. In fact, the coal emits an awful lot of mercury to the environment. In fact, here in the state, they say if a pregnant woman should avoid fish coming out of the lakes in this state. Is one trade-off any worse than the other if you're talking about the current status, or are we looking at maybe doing some of the things that we should have been doing, more windmills, more solar power, more of that? Thought.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. That's this, you know, the 10-year program, because this is not something we're going to be able to do overnight. This is, again, somebody in Washington who's going to have the political will, and again, I think it's going to take the people in order to do this, to get in touch with their congressmen and so forth, say, okay, we need something. Here's an idea. If this doesn't work, at least it's a starting point. Let's figure something else out. But this is where, like I said, this 10-year program comes in. While we're putting together the ramping up for the production of the electric vehicles and the increase in battery efficiency doing that research, we're also putting up the windmills and even tidal generating stations. You know, we have a big problem with wind is it doesn't blow all the time. The second problem is you don't have enough storage when it does. So let's take these interchangeable batteries, and I sent you a link to a little one-minute display that shows how these batteries are exchanged. It's not just the battery that starts your car, it's the entire battery that drives your car. And the way this, I think it's better, I forgot what the name of the company is, but it's out of California. They have a system where they have a robotic arm, kind of, it comes to your car, takes the battery pack out, puts in a new battery pack, and you're on your way. So you can have a vehicle that would only get 200 miles, but while we're building up, you know, like I said, building the cars, building the windmills and so forth, we're also converting a bay or two of service stations that we currently have that are pumping gas and convert those into battery exchange bays where you would just drive in, get your battery replaced, and you're on your way. So you could have a vehicle which would provide almost all of the needs for people, whether they want to take a long trip or whether they're just bouncing back and forth within the city. They have that flexibility with this type of car. And again, it's, you know, it would be a massive program, but when you consider, and you brought it up, you know, how many dollars do we spend in the military just to protect our oil interests? I don't think anybody really believes that we care about Omar Gaddafi. We didn't care about Saddam Hussein or any of the other dictators who were treating their people poorly. We just wanted to make sure that our oil continued to flow.
Yep.
So we're spending, I think the last figure I saw was something like $600 billion a year on the military. So if you go back 10 years, you know, you're talking $6 trillion. Well, gee, that would cut a little bit into the deficit. If you take a look, I think last year we imported something to the tune of $300 billion in foreign oil. Go back 10 years, and obviously we didn't, we haven't imported $300 billion each year for the last 10 years. Well, let's just say we spent $1 trillion over that 10-year period of time. Well, that's another $1 trillion that we don't have as expendable income.
And what it also is it's a foreign country buying up our resources and buying up our nation because of the dollar being the reserve currency as well. That's another problem that no one ever talks about.
Yeah, well, it's just like you said, you know, you're talking about the rich and so forth. When we have, you know, taxpayer dollars, working dollars going to help the needy, that's redistribution of wealth.
Yeah, that's socialism. We can't have that.
Yeah, that's socialism. We can't have that. But when we have the working person's money being funneled to the very richest, well, that's capitalism at its best. You know, I don't see the difference myself. other than one guy is sitting in a 50-room mansion and the other guy is sitting in a public housing project because he can't get a job because all the jobs have been shipped overseas, or our wealth for the working person has been transferred to foreign countries to provide, you know, oil and all the things we need.
Yep. Last question I got for you. Got about a minute left.
Sure.
You know, as we move forward, as we're looking at this, you know, President Obama ran on a platform that we were going to invest in this, and he has done a little bit. I don't think it's near enough. Again, I want to go back to this idea because I need to get a firm grip of this. Where do you think the squeal point is to get people off of their couches, out in front of the boob tube and getting active?
You know, I just don't know. I thought running as a congressional candidate as a third party, we certainly were going to do better than we did because Republicans and Democrats have caused, you know, in Illinois, in areas of Illinois, 15% unemployment. I thought at least those people who had lost their jobs would have gotten off their butts and voted for either our party or in Illinois. We even had the choice of the Libertarian Party. And people, I think 93% of the people decided that the status quo was perfectly fine because half of the people stayed home, didn't vote. And 43% of the rest of the people voted for Republicans or Democrats.
Yeah, their team won. Yeah, gonna vote.
I'm not sure, you know, where that tipping point is, but until we do something, and again, unfortunately, we have this battle between the left and the right. And I think this is something Perot came up with. If you have a bird and you take off your left wing and you take off the right wing, the bird can still survive. You take out the body and those two wings are worthless.
Yep.
And that's the problem we have now. Those who are in control have done such an outstanding job of keeping us fighting each other, whether it's pro-union or pro-workers' rights, whether it's pro-gun, anti-gun, whatever it is. They've done such a good job of keeping us battling each other, we fail to see who the real enemy is.
Yeah, sliced and diced. Dan Karas, I appreciate your time. Illinois Green Party, their website, ilgp.org. Some interesting stuff over there. I appreciate your time. Great information. Thank you.
Hey, no problem. Anytime you want to get back to me and we can discuss this further, I'd be more than happy to do it again.
All righty. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this with your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. I just don't believe.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
At last, some uplifting economic news, a sign that the economy is really starting to hum again. Forbes magazine reports that there are 199 more billionaires this year than last. Moreover, the combined wealth of the world's 1,210 billionaires now totals $4.5 trillion, up by nearly $1 trillion from a year ago. So see, the economy is not stuck in the doldrums, as so many party poopers keep saying. Also, with an average of $3.7 billion in their bank accounts, you can just bet that these uber-rich folks will be spending like crazy, and you know what that means, don't you? It means that their vast piles of wealth will soon begin to tinkle down on you and me. Just you wait and see. And wait, and wait, and keep waiting. Workers in our country have been dramatically increasing their productivity since the highly ballyhooed economic recovery began about 20 months ago, generating billions of dollars in new wealth. Yet, wages have stayed stagnant. Practically none of the increased wealth from worker productivity gains has gone to the workers. Instead, 94% of the money has been siphoned off by the corporate powers for such things as fattening profits at a record pace and jacking up CEO pay to exorbitant levels. Also, nearly $2 trillion of the gains have simply been stashed in the corporate vaults rather than using it for wage hikes or new job creation. And even the little bit of job creation that is taking place is bottom-heavy. 40% of the jobs lost in the recent economic crash were high-paying positions, but 49% of the new jobs are low-paying. This is Jim Hightower saying, so we see corporations and billionaires wallowing in fabulous new wealth while productive workers fall out of the middle class. That's not a recovery by any means. It's a robbery.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Exposing GOP half-truths, lies, and hypocrisy every weeknight from 9 to midnight. Rick Smith.
Everything's raisin but the way it is. Everything's raisin but the way it is. Gasoline, groceries, and our hate is. Everything's raisin but the way it is.
You know, and going back to what Dan Kuras had to say, you know, you look at the reality is we have seen this massive shift. As gas prices go up, as food prices go up, as all of this stuff increases, all of these costs increase, wages don't. And what we're seeing across the spectrum is this move of people stealing back wage gains. Along with the fact that you're stealing the rights of workers to collective bargaining, this is about stealing wealth from those people. For those families, food prices don't go down. The cost of gas to get to and from work, that doesn't go down. None of that stuff goes down. So what's going on, and the reason I think the right has gotten a little bit of traction here, is that most workers in this country don't have the ability to stand up and fight back. And I've talked about this in the past. I think they're used to being beat up. So when I see in Wisconsin, and Nick Milroy has a state representative there, has a great picture on his Twitter page and on his Facebook page of this Americans for Prosperity van. They've got a whole fleet of these vans and buses that they duck out with just amazing decals and displays. It is fantastic. The money that they put into this stuff is mind-blowing. More than most, I would say one of those vans with all of the displays on it cost more than most people make in a year. And on the side of it, and this is what I found interesting, they used a Margaret Thatcher quote. She said, and this is what was on the side of it, fight back Wisconsin, or, you know, fight back against, you know, those evil people. But they use this Maggie Thatcher quote, there can be no liberty unless there is economic liberty. And I would agree with that. What we're seeing now is not economic liberty. What we're seeing is wage theft on every level. And the people who should be fighting back for this economic liberty are the very people who are getting screwed by someone like Walker. That's why I think this whole, it's really an upside down world. We have fallen down the rabbit hole. And on there it says, fight back, Wisconsin. Correct me if I'm wrong here, but didn't the Republican governor sign the bill that was rammed through by the Republican House and the Republican Senate? What's the fight back against? Republicans robbed workers of their rights, stole wages from every worker in the state. What is it for them to fight back against? I understand the workers being ticked. I get it. You stole wages from me. You stole my right away. But for the people defending Walker, what's the fight back against? I'm completely baffled. But again, they think we're dumb. And the more I look around, maybe we are. A Newsweek survey came out and said 29% of the people in this country couldn't name the vice president. So maybe, I don't know, maybe we've fallen down the rabbit hole, Jake. I do not know.
It does make you wonder. I mean, really, simple things like that. I mean, actually, there's a bunch of Americans that you took them to a globe that actually couldn't point out the United States, their own country. And that sounds silly. I mean, we laugh about it, but it's a reality. I don't know the answer, Rick.
The answer is cutting education funding. That's the answer.
No,
cut $1 billion to education. Cut college education. Cut funding for that by 54%. That's the answer. Because here's the thing. While we're sitting poor and broke, maybe we'll be too stupid to realize it. Maybe, like Kasich in Ohio, maybe we can consume more alcohol to drown all of that negative emotion, thus improving the economy for alcohol.
Well, what people like Kasich and Snyder in Michigan and the governor in Wisconsin have done, they've put the antenna up for a lot of people who normally wouldn't be politically active. But what they want to do is so egregious and so out of norm and quite frankly, so un-American that I think nationwide, I think they've really rejuvenated millions of Americans. And I truly do believe they ultimately are going to pay a great political price.
Well, I sure hope so. I sure hope that the 51% of the people who voted, union members who voted for Corbett and Toomey, I hope in the next election they take a long, hard look at what's going on.
And the beautiful thing is that in Michigan and Wisconsin, they've opened a door. They've opened that Pandora's box and gave millions of Americans a view of what America would be like if these people got their way.
And now the Democratic Party better wake up and get in line. And we better have candidates who are going to do the will of the working people. You know, we thought we had that guy. We thought Obama was going to be that guy. Maybe he still will be. But to this point, I'm not thrilled with what I've seen. I am not. I am 100% dead set against this action in Libya. I'm not happy at all about the fact that the Employee Free Choice Act has not seen the light of day. There's an awful lot of things to be not happy about.
Well, you and I know a good number of labor leaders, and if you talk to them privately, they will say we are disappointed with the president. And we have a right to be on some basic issues. Now, you know, we talked about what's happening in Wisconsin, and what gets the publicity is his anti-union positions. But let me take about 30 seconds here and articulate what he's doing to non-union people. For many of them are non-union people. He's going after senior care prescription drug program in Wisconsin, the Badger Care health care program, which, by the way, has over 400,000 in it.
Yeah, you remember when we talked to the farmer who was at the big tractor-cade, mm-hmm. who said, look, you know, they're taking, most of the farmers are on that, mm-hmm. and they're stealing our health care.
Family care support services for the elderly, as well as tax relief for low-income workers and property owners. Is there no shame with these people? Is there no shame? They just don't care. I mean, you are attacking the most vulnerable people.
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, after the November elections, they said that was going to happen. They're going to balance the budgets on the people least able to defend themselves, and they've done it. Congratulations. They've won. Now what are we going to do about it? That's the question. Anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Victoria Jones Talk Radio News Service. We're right back after this.
Together, we can make America better. The Rick Smith Show.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
AFSCME Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. And now from the news from Washington, D.C., Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Victoria, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you.
And what is going on in Washington this evening?
Well, in Washington itself, the Supreme Court seems to be the only body that's still here. You've got Congress has left for its recess and presidents in South America. But the Supreme Court had two interesting rulings today. One siding with investors against companies and the other siding with workers. So that's unusual for them. The workers case was fascinating. It's a decision in which the court ruled against business interests, saying that an oral complaint against an employer is enough to protect a worker against retaliatory action such as firing. Kevin Kastner told his employer that its placement of time clocks was illegal and was meant to cheat employees. So the company moved the clocks and fired him. And the Fair Labor Standards Act of 1938 prohibits retaliation against a worker who's filed a complaint.
Wow.
And the question was whether the complaint must be written. And six members of the court said it didn't. And they said, look, the government's often accepted and acted on oral complaints, and the law was passed at a time when many workers were illiterate.
So which six?
Everybody except Antonin Scalia and Clarence Thomas, and Elena Kagan did not take part.
Thomas I knew, but I just wanted to see where Scalia was. So, wow, that's pretty impressive. That's a pretty good decision.
Pretty good decision. And the other interesting one was they decided that a group of stockholders can proceed with a lawsuit against the makers of the nasal spray cold remedy Zicam, saying the manufacturer should have disclosed that some who used the product lost their sense of smell. You may remember this.
Yeah, I do.
They said the Matrix initiatives have been warned about the possibility, but that even after lawsuits were filed against the company, it issued statements saying that such allegations were completely unfounded and misleading.
Well, they got a lot of money tied up in research and development, so they had to make that money back. Return on investment, you know.
Exactly. Sure. And Justice Sonia Sotomayor said, you know something? That investors intend to prove that Matrix received information that plausibly indicated a reliable causal link between Zicam and losing your sense of smell. So we'll see.
Yeah, we shall see. What else is going on in Washington?
Interesting. The Senate Democrats are accusing Republicans of pushing spending cuts that will lead to higher energy prices. They sent a letter today to House and Senate Republican leaders, the bulk of the caucus. The Democratic leaders take aim at House-passed spending legislation that would cut the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, and that polices oil futures markets. And they basically call this reckless energy proposal, and they say it will condemn our country to continued reliance on foreign oil and allow market manipulation that could lead to gas prices rising unchecked. Basically, the House Republican plan to fund the government through the end of fiscal year 2011 would slash almost $57 million from their budget of the CFTC. And the CFTC chairman said the GOP cuts, if enacted, would make his agency less effective. So the Democrats are saying, look, you know, you're going to make our gas price problem worse. This is going to undermine the progress we're making in developing the clean energy technologies so that we can better compete with countries like China.
Well, as I've always said, to make a political point, Republicans will cut off their nose in spite of their face.
Yes, and just in case we're thinking it's bad, I should just let you know, my brother told me today it's $9 a gallon in England.
Wow. Well, I mean, you know, if we were to pay the true costs, you know, that we may be right there ourselves.
Yeah.
So what else is going on in the world of politics there in D.C.?
Representative Dennis Kucinich, who's been an outspoken critic of the U.S. involvement in Libya, has announced that he plans to introduce an amendment to the next federal budget bill barring funding for military involvement in Libya. And he says, while the administration assures us that the U.S. will hand off its lead role to coalition partners within days, we've not been notified of long-term plans or goals following initial airstrikes in the country, and the timeline the president gave to Congress was summarized with one word, limited. And he says he's going to attach the amendment to whatever piece of legislation the House will propose to fund the rest of the 2011 fiscal year.
Well, I got to tell you, I'm not in favor of it, and I hope Dennis is successful in what he's doing.
He's definitely going to give it a go. I don't know how far he'll get with it, but he's definitely going to give it a college try.
Because at the end of this, you know, if we're taking the position that we've got to go in there to, you know, to help liberate those people, well, you know what? There are a lot of other countries. Yemen, for instance, they're in the middle of turmoil as well. Why aren't we talking about going there?
Well, then you get into geopolitics.
Yeah, I know. Where do you start drawing the line? There are a lot of countries around the world. I haven't heard Darfur in quite some time.
Yeah, you don't hear about Darfur too much. The Afghanistan story of the pictures of the striker team, the rogue striker team, the U.S. striker team who allegedly killed Afghan civilians for sport. These pictures, as you know, have appeared in Der Spiegel, three of them, although about 4,000 exist, and the story is finally receiving at least some coverage, although the TV's pretty much ignoring it. There are 12 of this team on trial in Seattle, five of them for capital murder. One of them has pleaded guilty. Now, this is really interesting because he is going to be willing to testify against the others.
Wow. You know, again, this is another one of those scenarios where you put people into these situations, and you get a couple, you know, that get into these situations. Not good, and that's another reason why I don't want to be in Libya. And what else is going on tonight?
The other thing that's going on tonight, of course, is we're all waiting with bated breath, really, for the sun to come up on Yemen and see who else is abandoning President Saleh over there. Today was not a good day for him, as more and more people have abandoned him. He is now warning of civil war, and it actually is a possibility. Whether it would be good or bad for Yemen is unknown, but he's increasingly isolated. It's a very serious situation over there. Meantime, in Libya, you've got Allied fighters striking targets in Tripoli in a fourth day of air strikes, but you've still got forces loyal to Colonel Gaddafi showing no signs of ending their sieges of rebel-held cities. And the president is spoken today with French and British leaders in an effort to defuse this disagreement that's been going on among the Allies about how to manage the military action against Libya. So he's mending fences with them, even if he isn't mending fences with Congress, which certainly he's not.
Again, I still think he should have gone to Congress before he did this. At some point, we've got to take that back. Just my thought, Victoria. Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service, appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
All righty. And now for what's going on in Harrisburg. Give it to me, Jake.
U.S. Department of Labor's Occupational Safety and Health Administration has fined a Pittsburgh area firm $129,900 for exposing workers to dangerously high levels of lead, among other violations in its work repainting the George Wage Bridge in Harrisburg. Canonburg-based Pathera Painting Company, Inc., has 15 days to fix the violations, ask for an informal conference with the agency's area director, or fight the citations, OSHA officials have said. Message left today with company officials was not immediately returned. OSHA has begun inspecting the site in September after it was alerted to the hazards during another inspection involving the project's general contractor. The company was fined $42,000 for failing to monitor lead levels on a quarterly basis, 29 other violations totaling $87,300, including exposing workers to lead levels, electrical hazards, and having deficiencies in the company's lead protection program, officials have also stated. In addition, the company was cited for 5 non-OSHA serious violations, with penalties totaling $600 for not properly recording injuries and illnesses and not inspecting fire extinguishers.
Somebody's watching out for it.
Well, that's good to see.
Yep. Anything else going on in the world there in Harrisburg? Nope.
Well, yes. We talked about WAMs in the past. I don't know how much you want to get into that, but at the end of the day, Mr. Corbett, who, if you remember, said no more WAMs, now, that would mean, you would think that would mean that any WAM money that was in the system and he had power to do something about, he would stop those programs. Well, it seems that Mr. Corbett has kind of reneged on that a little bit, and to make a long story short, Rick, and I'm sure that'll help us for time constraints. Make a long story short, the governor has said after a certain date, and then in the next couple of weeks, there will be no more WAMs. But as far as money in the system, he's going to leave it go.
Well, so, you know,
so much for transparency.
Well, you know, again, you know, he doesn't want anybody else to have a flat screen TV. Because if we can't afford it, you don't buy the flat screen TV. You opt for the DVD player instead, which I'm still trying to figure out. I'm still trying to figure out how he went to the store looking for a flat screen TV to put into the upstairs bedroom of the governor's mansion, and came home with a DVD player when there's no TV. I'm really trying to work that through.
Just to give you a perspective, Rick, according to the AP, there was $48 million of WAMs in the pipeline that he let go through. So, you know, $48 million, nice little payday for somebody.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, you know, that's still things that get done in people's districts. You know, it's like this whole earmark argument. You know, that's stuff that gets done in districts. That's the stuff where you identify a need in your district. You went to your congressman, you went to your representative, and said, hey, we need this. We need libraries. We need
senior
post office. We
senior centers. Who's going to argue about a senior center?
We need a place to store old people. Right. Right there with you.
You know, and I don't know that you're storing them there. You're giving them a place to recreate.
To play bingo.
And dance a little bit. You know.
Do they do that?
Have a little fun.
Does your generation still do that?
You are not being nice.
We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this.
Now time comes, so you might start. money and shipping it on shore. Do the job you're looking for.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Is that old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Call me the American
dream. Call me your sugar and take. Call me anything you need. And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, bang, right there, podcast, downloaded for your convenience, your entertainment, everything right there for you. If you want to contact me, you can email me, Rick at the ricksmithshow.com. That's Rick at the ricksmithshow.com. This is one of those stories that kind of make me go, does the guy even know where the bathroom is yet? Has he found his parking space? But evidently, according to the Charleston Post and Courier, there in Kentucky, Rand Paul is thinking about running for president. I'm kind of just trying to grasp this. He said, the only decision that I've made is I won't run against my dad. So he's not going to run against his father. But somehow this guy who's been, since January, a senator? You want to talk about no experience? Wow. I don't even think he knows where the bathroom is yet. Really, I don't. Because he still has to go to his house where the toilet doesn't flush. And evidently he's not smart enough to fix the toilet. Because if you remember that whole rant he went on, well, you know, because of you green people, I don't have a toilet that flushes. Seems kind of dumb to me. Anyway, Reuters reported today that capitalism may be the blame for lack of life on the planet Mars. According to Hugo Chavez, he said in his speech to mark World Water Day, I have always said, heard, that it would not be strange that there had been civilization on Mars, but maybe capitalism arrived there, imperialism arrived, and finished off the planet. You know, look, he's pointing his fingers at the U.S. And, you know, I got to be honest, I'm in favor of World Water Day, because the reality is if we don't do something to protect our water, We're in big trouble. And like I said earlier, there's an oil tanker that's leaking right now in the Atlantic. Some 1,500 tons of oil, you know, possibly killing off one of the a rare species of penguin. We've got oil coming onto the shore in New Orleans. Could be, who knows, could be one of the wells that they plugged that's now come loose. Who knows? At the end of this, we got to start talking about alternative energy. And, you know, nuclear power has been in the news since, you know, everything happened in Japan. And you look at what's going on there. The reality is there's a growing problem right here. According to the AP, the reactors in more than 30 states have some almost 72,000 tons of waste that they don't know where they're going to put it. All of the storage, the permanent storage that they have, it's full. And, you know, there was some talk during the Nevada senatorial race of building a nuclear waste site there in the mountains, which have been, not done yet. But they're saying that even if we built this, there's still more out there than that would even take. So our problem is growing exponentially. Again, you know, for me, that kind of bothers me. When you're looking at something that takes, a couple thousand years to go away,
The half-life is... Are you telling me that the salt mines, and I believe they're using salt mines there in New Mexico, they are all full?
That's what this report is saying. Everything's full. They're maxed out. They don't know what to do with this stuff.
I mean, we joked about it, but I had heard some talk about... Now, this could be very dangerous, but shooting some of it in space, I don't know how you do that.
Yeah, there's a good idea.
With the massive amount.
So it comes raining down on us. Yeah, let's do that.
Hey, look, I'm just telling you what some people, I'm not saying it's the way to go.
And let's cut $1 trillion to education. So when it comes raining down, we'll think it's wonderful. And then we'll wonder why the crops aren't growing. You ever see that movie Idiocracy? If you have it, it's worth an afternoon of rain to spend in front of this thing, where they use sports drink to water the crops, and then they're wondering why the crops don't grow, because of all the sugar and all the acids and everything that's in this sports drink. Same kind of thing. If we cut $1 billion from education, if we cut education budgets across the country, we won't know any better, and I don't know why the radiation rain is killing off all the crops.
Well, here's an idea. I don't know about Mars. We might get to Mars another 50 years, but how about the moon? Why don't we just store it up there in the moon?
Yeah, who needs that moonlight at night? In fact, if you sent the radiation up, it might glow brighter, and we could have sun like in Alaska 24 hours a day. It'll be light all day long. That'd be a great idea. I think you have come on to something. We wouldn't need street lights and save us taxpayer dollars. That, my friend, is a great freaking plan.
Well, we joke about it, but long term, that's a serious, serious problem for the nuclear industry.
Which, again, is another reason, though, I am not in favor of building more of them. Now, look, I understand. You know, it's going to create a lot of jobs to build one. My problem is it's not a cheap fuel like we've been told. And I'm sorry, there's just too much water involved in it.
Well, and then we get into the problem of water. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. New legislation introduced in the Senate today would slash retirement pensions for all federal employees hired at 2013 and beyond. This has invoked the argument that benefits for government workers are too generous and are a large contributor to the budget deficits, which they're not. Republican Senator Richard Burr and Republican Senator Tom Coburn, Republican Oklahoma, have put forth the Public-Private Employee Retirement Parity Act. So here's how this is going to work. Corporate America has screwed their workforce to the point to where they have no retirement. So we need parity, okay? We need to go after those people who still have pensions, and we need to make sure that they don't have them either. So from 2013 forward, no more of that. You're going to get some kind of concocted thrift plan, which, you know, here you go, Wall Street. What can you steal today? You know, again, this attack on workers, this attack on, instead of raising standards up, we're destroying people. And I find it hysterical that we've put up with it this long. Anyway, today, back in 1947, another hey, let's go after those federal workers. Let's screw those workers. President Truman ordered loyalty checks. Yes, yes, yes. You remember the Cold War was, developed after World War II, and we had this whole fear that communists were everywhere, and the McCarthys of the world were promoting that, just like they're doing with Al-Qaeda. Around every corner, there's a commie. Just like, behind you, quick, it's Al-Qaeda. Kind of the same thing, but back then, made all government employees sign loyalty cards. Yes, we're loyal. I'm not quite sure what the whole signing process was meant to do, but congratulations. On this day, 1947, all the federal workers were pushed around and beaten up and forced to sign loyalty oath cards.
Well, if you remember, it wasn't just the government employees. I mean, that was the time of the Red Scare. There were a lot of people in Hollywood that were blacklisted. Just the simple testimony of an individual before a congressional committee could blacklist you for the rest of your life in Hollywood. And there were quite a few of them.
Domestic violence, the Agency France Press writes, against women rose in regions whose NFL teams lost big games that they were expected to win, according to research here in the U.S. The research funded by the U.S. National Institute of Health. See, this is the reason we need to do away with government intervention, government money. No more funding for the National Institute of Health. We don't need fun. We don't need polls like this. Men should be able to beat their wives when they want to. They found that, during the big games, there was a jump of 20% in domestic abuse, which meant, the drunken husband who, and I'm generalizing, I don't know many drunken wives who bet on football games. I guess I'm stereotyping. But the drunken husband with the wife beater t-shirt, and the bad bet, lost his paycheck, no rent money, She got a little mouthy saying, what are we going to do? I can't feed the kids. There's no milk. And she had to be put in her place.
Aren't you being a sexist? Couldn't there be some women beating up their husbands?
Yeah. But most of those pay for it. At least most of the people that I know. Tomorrow, the Capitol Rotunda here in Harrisburg, 10:30 a.m., the citizens' hearing and a rally for the Affordable Care Act. I hope folks will come out and participate in this. I'm not thrilled with the bill. It is a step in the right direction, I think. I think we're moving towards something bigger, something better. But this is an opportunity to get out and say, hey, push people into setting up these exchanges in the right way. These exchanges are going to be really important moving forward. So it's important for folks to get out, get active, get involved, and to be educated on this, because this is the future of our children. I don't ever want my kids to have to go without health care or to worry from day to day if they're going to be able to take their kids to the doctor. Anyway, thanks for being here. I want to thank all of our guests. Brett, the guy who slides the sliders and moves the knobs. We'll see you tomorrow night. Have a great night.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide and flood beneath the Buddha sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous ray. Democracy is coming to the
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.